This guy comes out of nowhere and just starts naming them. I mean, he's naming them hard as fuck. Wow, I can hardly fucking believe it. Mr. Lerman ain't fucking around. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Before I bust you in the mouth, I bust you in the mouth. Whoever's fucking radio is in the house. Get the fuck out of his way because he names the guy loud. Mr. Lerman doesn't have time to fuck around. He will steal your bitch, dog around, and come in the mouth. Mr. Lerman naming the guy loud and proud. Get the fuck back, bitch, before I bust you in the mouth. Fuck yeah, Mr. Lerman. Are you listening to me, world? You better bitch, because I ain't fucking around.
Fuck yeah, Mr. Lerman. Fuck yeah, Mr. Lerman. Fuck yeah, Mr. Lerman.
We'll be right back. Stay right there.
You want me to go ahead?
Oh, my God.
Is this a meaningless victory?
It's an army.
You're on your own as usual.
The right perspective.
The right perspective.
The right perspective.
The right perspective.
Daddy, yeah.
Come closer, said the spider to the fly. Come closer. Television. My addiction. My Bible. My bile, my life, on trial, killer poster. I never thought it would come to this. Dancing out of fucking disease. I never thought you could find you, true guest, sucked down your gathering halls. I never thought. I never thought it could ever come true. The more you help me, the more I wanna hurt you. I never thought it could ever come true. The more you help me, the more I wanna hurt you. Manifest something on my face. Manifest that I need it to love you. Manifest something that's the only one that I'm thinking of. If you ever think that I'm on my face, if you ever think that I need it to love you. I never thought it would come to them. Dancing now, you're drunk and diseased. I never thought could confide in you. Truth gets sucked down your memory holes. Drawing not a breath, drawing the frontier. God whispers this to your ear. I never thought it could never come true. The hills have eyes over in motel hell. Dancing for the drunken disease like we do.
Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Yes, Mr. Lerman.
If I have to, I have to.
Yes.
But I really hate
Davis Lerman.
He likes to stare at crotches.
Mm. Yes, Daddy. Yeah.
Right Perspective Radio with Davis Lerman.
Would you like to know more?
Davis Lerman and the Right Perspective. The Right Perspective.
Right Perspective.
Oh, no.
doesn't matter, the poor get thin, while the rich getting fatter, whatever happened to the enemy here is you! To my surprise, they believe the lies, and they put my godlike fantasy, and survive the scheme of the delivery, you get another tremendous fantasy! We tried assassination, but it's still the same to me! Martin Lennon, Ronald Reagan, it's still the same to me! Left wing, right wing, think it doesn't matter, cause the poor get thinner, while the rich are getting fatter, whatever happened to the human race, can't you see? I'm not okay, but you let me in into a place where I could be a sin. Can make you come, can make you stay away, but you can make me lose along the way. To my surprise, they believe the lies, and they put my godlike fantasy. I survived the scheme of the delivery. I'm getting another tremendous fantasy. We tried assassination, but it's still the same to me. Demonstrating their violence, but it's still the same to me. Economic sanctions, try dragging the national fund, humiliation and condemnation, it's still the same to me.
It doesn't matter, the poor get thin, or while the rich are getting fatter, whatever happened.
I don't know.
If Lucifer had a son, it would be
Davis Lerman.
This guy spews hate, racism. He's an anti-Semite.
Davis Lerman and the Right Perspective. The Right Perspective.
He doesn't care what you feel. He just wants to know what you think. Davis Lerman.
Right on. All right, everybody. Right Perspective Radio Live. Doing a slightly more casual layout here tonight. But first, we will go to the chats, of course. So,
well, hey, hello, welcome to the stream, everybody.
It just never, it never ends. It's always something. So, how are you guys? Welcome. Who do we have here? We got
MFC NorCal, Bigfoot WV, Katakashiro, Serbian Bull, and Kick Chef. What's up, guys? I saw over at F2 the T to the J. Got Bushmaster 6A, Cash for Kikes. What's up, guys? All right. Oh, by the way, Bigfoot WV wanted to announce that on Buy Me a Coffee, you hooked your guy up. When was that? I need to look. Oh, there it is. Yes, very recently, 5 hours ago. Excellent. Thank you, buddy. Bigfoot WV. Oh, you know, that reminds me. We do have a Bigfoot WV sound drop. All right, let's go to that. All right, here we go. Here it is.
Bigfoot.
W.
V.
Right.
Big.
Bigfoot.
Foot. A letter W and a letter V.
Thank you, sir. All right, he says, you got it, Davis. Nice. All right, guys. Well, we'll leave the drops window open. Why not? Why the heck not? I hope this is the last of this post-flu nonsense. Let's hope. I can't say for sure, but let's hope. Either that, or I've transitioned out of the flu and into allergies or something. I don't know. I'm going to do my best. I shan't be sucking on cough lozenges, though. Otherwise, I'll sound like Paul, in his intimate moments with the McRib, which is not what you guys need. Yes, it's not like you came from the McRib noises and stayed for the news and analysis. Am I right? Okay. Ah, yes, here we are. I knew we had lots for you tonight. Me. Where the hell is my... Oh, okay, there it is. All right, let's go into the folder for this evening. Oh, yes. Always organized. Huh. Okay, Curtis Yarvin... expose. Well, we'll see about that. I still have a little something to say about Curtis Yarvin, particularly some of these gems from years ago before he was getting puff pieces in the New York Times and the like that were under the guise of, you know, critiquing the dark intellectual right or whatever. But ultimately, they were terribly complimentary. You know, this is what you end up with in the news when they're, you know, pretending to be critical of something, but they're in fact promoting it. This is what you get with Curtis Yarvin. So this is a Jewish fellow who's in the right circles, so to speak, and he's advancing a narrative that ultimately doesn't critique Judaism at all. Never a mention of any power they hold. Very strange. Although he'll nibble around the edges of oligarchy, but essentially tell you, like, listen, oligarchs are the elite, and the elite is just a reality. And while that may be true, there's different ways you can accept that reality. There's different ways you can come to terms with that reality. And I would suggest one of them shouldn't be just ignoring the Jewish dimension of the oligarch elite reality, right? Otherwise, I'm just doing something that benefits Jews for no good reason. And what would be the point of that? We also have the Dual Loyalty Disclosure Act. What Massey put together is quite interesting. It's, I would dare say it follows on the footsteps of the suggestion Right Perspective Radio had about a year ago that dual citizenship be deemed illegitimate and exclusionary criteria for public service or at the head of an organization, like as a captain of industry that affects a certain percentage of the economic sector of the United States. You could judge that, that too would be a bridge too far to have someone with dual loyalties, for example, in charge of, again, some industry that maybe impinged upon 0.5% of the U.S. Because all it would take is a gaggle of Jews with leadership and industries that can impinge upon your economy at 0.5%. And they can pretty soon take a 5% chunk out. And that's all that would be needed to begin everything from a run on the banks overnight to a myriad of other nightmare scenarios. So that'd be the reasoning. And there's lots of things like that in the Dual Loyalty Disclosure Act. So, yep. I mean, we can cross our fingers that it gets support. I sure hope it does. So we will see about that. All right, I don't know where to start first. I've got a lot of stuff here. I'm going to save the body cam footage. I'm going to save that story. Oh, boy. You know what? It's so distasteful. I think I will just get it out of the way. I mean, this is like, I played you the video of the poor autistic fellow who, he had no one to tell him happy birthday, so he called the police and asked if they would come say happy birthday. Now, I understand he's autistic, but I think it's an indicator of a lot of the loneliness in America, the disconnection. This was a white autistic guy. And, of course, we're not in a position to weaponize this autiste and make him a network of our people. It's not like he was a retard or something. He was just autistic. So, there's a spectrum. It's a spectrum disorder. So there's very high-functioning autistic, and then there's, the ones who seem ill-suited to, contributing in any way in a society. I don't know. I'm trying to say it politely. Right. Like, they can be fauna, basically. They could be, like, fauna, or they could be high-functioning autism spectrum disorder adults. So it just depends. But anyway, either way, it's an indication of loneliness. And here's another terrible bit of fallout, I'll dare say. So we have, you'll see, it's a perfectly good looking younger girl. I mean, she's not the best or anything. It's just nothing wrong with her. She wouldn't have any trouble getting a date, but because of the weird Jewish insulators between white people now, they evidently are getting together less and less. Is this true? I mean, I guess all the teenage kids are addicted to porn, and then the girls are, I don't know. This is the figures I'm reading. I have no idea how they even determined this, by the way. It must be self-reported. But evidently the kids are not having, they're not having sexual relations like normal teenagers would in every other generation. So it's awfully strange. All right, here it is. Here it is. Again, file. I'm not playing this for sensationalism. It's kind of sad. I hate to say we might see more of this, because if there's lonely people, you're going to start getting weird scenarios like people calling the police to tell them happy birthday in person. And, well,
and this. Committed arrest for a natural intercourse with a dog. According to the Pine Belt News, the incident came to light after a video surfaced online. Authorities say Denise Frazier's second time arrested for such acts. The 20-year-old was arrested by the Hattiesburg Police Department back on February 29th and charged with one count of attempted unnatural intercourse and also one count of unnatural intercourse. 18-year-old Skylar English was also arrested the same day and charged with accessory after the fact. Both Frazier and English were booked into the Forest County Correctional Facility.
Accessory after the fact. All right, so her friend's in on it. I'm just saying, these are the weird cultural and sexual deformations you're going to find in a Jewish-run society where loneliness is an endemic, at endemic levels. Yeah, it's just sad. Like I said, this is, I mean, it's sad all around. It's not great for the dog either, right? So, I mean, it's bad. It's sad all around. But, okay, you know, this should be, if this country were not on Jews, this girl would be in a sundress with men knocking on the door, asking her father permission to take her on dates. And oh, she might even have a child by now. Who knows? Who knows? Now imagine she's got to live with that the rest of her life. Sheesh. All right. So file that under American dysfunction. Very, very sad. Tonight won't be all sad, don't worry. Although I do have something else that's sad. I'm afraid we're going to have to take a look at this. All right, here we go. I got a little something for you. So this is Brett Cooper, who I don't know a lot about. I can be honest with you. I don't follow the cutie conservatives. I was going to say conservative cuties, but she's not exactly qualified to be that. But she was one of the cutie servatives, fast talking with all the sort of conservative right of center opinions. And I guess it's a good grift if you can get it. I don't know. But well, you'll see. I'll show you. It seems that the clock may have run out on poor Brett Cooper, who I know that's a boy's name, but it's a girl. All right, let's go over here to the studio and add. I'll give her this. At least it's not a stripper name, which is kind of a step up in America. All right, share screen. Brett Cooper reacts to Reagan. I don't even know who Reagan is. Reagan taking over her spot at Daily Wire. I mean, why we're supposed to care about this is a little odd, I suppose. But hey, if the Daily Wire dies on the vine, how great would that be? Oh, man. I would love to see little Benny Shapiro crying in his kike flakes. All right, let's see. We'll go over here and press play.
How long was it after you left the Daily Wire that
adult friendships were really hard?
When you left, your maid of honor.
What does this next chapter look like?
Do you want to say anything to her?
See, this is all just a little teaser at the beginning. Right? You must remember what she looked like, right? She's weird looking now. What happened? I think it's if you surround yourself with Jews for just one day too many, it's like a cliff. It's as if the Jewish poison has entered her body and taken her from something approximating adorable to this.
What was the final straw? I mean, almost nobody would give that up.
Yeah.
And start from scratch. And that's why I respect you so much.
Mm-hmm. It was terrifying. I had to, you know, Alex and I had a conversation. This was not like this is a lot of thinking and praying and analyzing. And we looked at each other and we're just kind of like, are we basically willing to lose everything and start from scratch? Because again, we had, you know, Alex had just started his own business.
So daring.
We had bought this farm that was like, it was a stretch. But we really wanted it.
So daring. All right. Anyway, here's what she used to look like. See what I mean? Don't hang around the kikes. Say, look at Ben leering. Here's Ben leering at her from behind the curtain. Right? Something approximating adorable. I mean, not perfect. Maybe not your thing, but there's nothing wrong with her. And now, I've got to say, now she kind of looks like a... Wow, look at here. She's super adorable. Whoa. Come on. All right. What? Too much. Oh, look at this. Someone saying nude leaks. I don't want that link. Definitely not interested in that. You don't need nude leaks when you have this, right? So she's already put it out there, I suppose. Unless it's AI. All right. You get my point, right? Something's up. The Daily Wire is leeching beauty from white women. Yeah, we get it. Oh, my God. Ladies, we love you, but some of you, not always honest in clash, they're very pithy. But some of you ladies, you gotta figure out how to do like a beginning, middle, end, and just get to it. Just get to the point. We love you, but man, let's put it this way. If you're a 6.5 and you're going to tell a story that slow, expect 90% of the guys to have their heads turned by the time you're about halfway through the story. So if you're smoking, if you're like Margot Robbie beautiful, she could linger on and on and on, and you're just hanging on everywhere. Forget you don't even know what she's talking about, and you're still lingering. Whole other thing. All right, let's jump forward a little and get a flavor for this. By the way, this dude's got the weirdest lighting setup. I got to show you this because this is funny. A few months ago, I was thinking like, I could take a room in this place I'm renting and I could turn it into a studio. That was before I learned it's not really a sustainable model. But anyway, look at this. Here you go. How weird is that? It's this track lighting pointing at her, but not him. So I guess he puts his guests under the third degree. Look at this douchebag. America. Anyway. And then they like this fluorescent light on the floor. That's weird, right? It's weird. Oh, get to it. Yeah, we know. We got it. Wow. Listen to that. A lot of the ladies do this. They do the, what's that called? The vocal, you know what I mean? It's that vocal burning, that raspiness. They try to make their voice sound lower. She's been doing that lately. She never did that before. All right. It's just not, I mean, does she not know this is not that interesting? So you're wondering who is, yeah, we got, okay, you love your guy. That's wonderful. That's really good, actually. You're wondering who is Sean Ryan. Who the hell is Sean Ryan? He's the guy that said this.
It's going to be a bloody 2025.
There you go. He also spoke about the man pads are going to take down Trump's plane. That's why we all had to be on edge. Remember this guy?
We had some confirmed reporting through two solid sources. And this is where I have to be very iffy. And I told him in the car, and he can tell you offline, I cannot say this on the air, but we had two solid sources, one south of the border and then one from an element within our own government that confirmed independently of each other that some, Iranian made man pads, so surface to air missiles had come across the border. We had the location and everything else. Well, Doc, that's what he goes by, Doc Chambers, he put this out on a podcast, and I was very emphatic, like, this is not stuff that I like to put on social media. Mm-hmm. I'm an intel guy by trade. This stuff is not for social media consumption. We got this to Secret Service. We did the whole the whole gamut and got everything pushed to them. And that's why Trump was pushing a lot of this stuff out when he was, because we had told the Secret Service and they had the reporting and everything else. But we have not, to my knowledge, have not recovered those man pads. Now, I'm not privy to that, but what I do know we have done is we have apprehended the couriers on a second run of theirs, and we have local law enforcement got together with federal law enforcement and rolled up the safe house in, I will not say that on this show, but they rolled up the safe house where it was.
Super secret.
But it was something we found was pertinent, because at the time, Trump was still campaigning. He was flying around, and there was the reports were their intent was to take down Trump's airplane. So at the time, Secret Service switched things up a bit, and allegedly, from what I've told, they started flying him around on charters for a while until they could identify and kind of mitigate that threat.
See, we were promised Trump's plane would come down, but all we got was a Tesla with fireworks in the trunk. So, as usual, that and a T-shirt, I guess. Okay, yeah, I see it. I realize now. So I don't know why that's doing that. Let me go over to StreamYard and I'll switch a few things up, and then you'll see the now less than lovely Brett Cooper. We won't spend as much time on it, obviously. You've already heard my narration, but yeah.
Well, it's not playing. You there?
Yeah.
It's not playing.
It's not playing? I'm sorry.
No.
I didn't share the right screen. Jesus. Okay. I was watching it. I was enjoying it very much.
There wasn't almost nobody would give that up.
There's the weird lighting.
Yeah.
And start from scratch. And that's why I respect you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Famous. Like, it comes with what I do, but I would be just as happy if I was telling stories in a different capacity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, so she's not even really a conservative. This is what I mean by the cutie conservatives. I just want to tell stories. Which, P.S., you got to work on this. Here, we'll let her go a little bit. You'll realize what she does. She just doesn't do a beginning, middle, end. And maybe a few details or something. It's just drone.
Knowing who you are and having influence and having eyes on you, then you kind of question people's motives in being friends with you. And it's kind of like a hard knowing how to meet people. And so I'm like loyal to maybe a fault. But I like.
Do you feel that she was disloyal?
So in interviews, she's one of these girls, when they say, well, tell us some of your faults, things you'd work on about yourself. And she's one of them, says, you know what? I'm just too loyal. I mean, I'm so loyal, I'm like loyal to a fault. So if you hire me, you don't have to worry about me going anywhere else. But she's one of those. I'm just loyal to a fault. I'm too organized. People have said that. It bothers them how organized I am. I mean, not so organized that I'm disruptive to a team, but I'm super organized.
Loyal and taking the role?
No, she can do. She's an adult. She, and this is what I will always stand by. You have to make the decision that is good for you and your family.
Right.
I did that, and she did that.
Why do you think the...
Okay, I don't even know who took her spot. Let's look that up. Who took Brett Cooper's spot at Daily Wire? I don't even know. Does YouTube work like this? Oh my God. Fine, I'll do it. Introducing Jeremy's Chocolate. Oh, brother. Oh, that's who it is. Okay, so this girl. Well, okay, she's not great either. I mean, nothing wrong with her, but... Right, Brett Cooper was like, see her in the middle of the panel there for Joe Rogan. She's really cute. I don't know. Maybe she's just, okay. And there she's looking weird there. I don't know what to tell you. It's strange. It's strange. I think you hang around. Again, my hypothesis is, listen, you're around Jews too long and they start sucking the, whatever makes you white, they start sucking it right out of you. That's why Candace Owens looks the way she does. They were putting white into her, I suppose. All right. Anyway, retarded. So wait, is that Brett Cooper? Yeah, that's 2 years ago. Okay. Interesting. What a douche this guy is. Oof. All right, now you know that's what she looks like, the one who took it over. I mean, who cares? I'm never going to watch the Daily Wire. Can't imagine watching the Daily Wire. I don't even know anybody who watches it. Yeah, do you know anybody who watches the Daily Wire? I find it hard to believe people in these circles know somebody watching the Daily Wire. Yeah, you know, it's funny, though. I heard the TRS guys reflecting on their days with NJP, and they found it odd that a lot of the guys that would join the NJP, like more than a handful of them, still listen to normie right of center type stuff like that. Isn't that weird? I guess it was the time member that was the 2016 was Charlottesville. People forget this, that Charlottesville happened under Donald Trump, immediately followed by BLM leaving wreckage in its wake. But yeah. So they went from Red Hat on to Red Hat off. So I guess it makes sense that there were some guys. But now, looking back now, it seems impossible. But yet, there are still people who they walk the fence there. They walk the line. They sit on the fence. You don't walk a fence, do you? All right. Yeah, diddly dee. All right. Yeah, I think we can shut that down. Very good, very good. Here we'll add to stage. Oh, that livens it up a little, doesn't it? Okay, we do have more, though. Let's present. No, share screen, entire window. Nah. Let's do video file. Oh, here we go. Okay. Now, this is something a lot of people struggle with. So, interesting video from an elementary school parent. So, this is a parent of someone who has an elementary school age child in Fairfax County, Virginia.
Mike Brote. I'm a mom of two in Fairfax County. This is my oldest. And my husband and I have a difficult decision.
Well, this kid's got the idea. Nice.
To make this fall, as he is approaching preschool age, and we are faced with the decision of whether or not we are going to put our child in public school system where Fairfax County has decided to move forward with instituting gender studies in elementary school. Despite having done a study group, a focus group in the community to see if parents even wanted this. And when parents said no, the board voted 16-0 and said we're moving forward anyways. This shows clearly that they see parents not as partners, but as an obstacle for their agenda. And I have a really hard time looking at him and going, here, I'm just going to give you over to people who do not want to partner with me in how you're going to be raised. School and education is a huge part of a child's life. And early childhood is supposed to be filled with exploration and creativity and fun, not debating issues that are for adults to handle. These kinds of topics should be introduced sensitively and by parents who are raising their children with their values, not with an ideology passed down from the top.
All right. Yes. Well, so this is the only thing that's new here is the fact that it's always been the case that on the federal level, the average citizen's desires and even the way they voted had little impact on public policy in any extent. And now that has been pressed down to the local level. So more than ever, we need viable, actual populism, which is why we find this business of Donald Trump so distasteful, because he's a faux populist. So all you get is the trappings of populism. You get the false Western town front of populism. You get placebo politics by way of faux populism. And what he can't manage through faux populism, the social engineering team steering Donald Trump fills in gaps and backfills with, let's face it, a healthy dose propaganda that tells you what we're deciding is something that's very popular. In fact, you wanted this. That's what they do. You wanted this, they say. In fact, let's look at that Gillens and Page study. Where would I find that? Yeah, I think this is it. Yeah, perspectives on politics. Let me go here now. Me present. Oh, look, it's over here. Let's see. No, we'll get rid of that. Remove. Oh, I see. I need to go to share screen. Here it is. You'll remember. As soon as you see this, you'll be like, oh, yeah. Gillens and Page. Here it is. American politics, elites, interest groups, and average citizens. In other words, you're going to find out that there is no connection between what the American people vote for and policy outcomes. And they looked at it, as they say here, multivariate analysis, they looked at it from every possible perspective on the data. And there's no way to tease out any correlation whatsoever between what people vote for and what is passed and, well, legislated into law. Essentially, this is how it goes. And forget foreign policy. In fact, there's an inverse connection with what people want and what actually happens when it comes to foreign policy. I feel like I'm telling you something you know already. But it's nice to see this. You can go to this link, Gillens and Page. In fact, let me go do this. I'm going to put this in both chats. Here we go. Believe it or not, that's the link. It's strange a link ends with a pound sign, but there it is. Let me go over to F to the T to the J and give everyone, well, bam. There's the link in case you want it. Cash for Kikes. I agree. The McRib tastes like ass, which is why, yeah, the joke is Paul making those sounds he makes when he, yeah, he makes those weird sounds. He swears he's not chewing and stuff. We know he's chewing, of course, but the joke is Paul is doing analingus with a McRib, as you know. Ha. Oh, God. Sean Ryan. People have opinions about Sean Ryan. Yes. Well, he's another plant, obviously. He goes from a literal unknown to this dude making commentary. Everyone's hanging on his every word overnight. That's weird. Right? That's pretty weird. It's a hypnosis session, his tone and cadence. Yeah, it's so goddamn boring. But maybe he thinks that's the way to do it, because when you have people like Lex Fridman putting everyone to sleep, that dude with the skinny, you know, the black tie, he dresses like a 50s FBI agent. And talk about high-functioning autism. Boring. Monotone. Lex Fridman, human Ambien. Literally. In fact, there should be a class-action suit against Lex Fridman for the no doubt many car crashes and truck crashes, trucks flying off the road, careening off the road, and fiery balls of death as the drivers fall asleep at the wheel. It's all his fault. Now, at least Joe Rogan will keep you awake. It's not great, but at least. Oh, Swampy with F question mark. That's strange. Here you go. I'll give you a U back. You like that? There you go. Yes, the ocean sound of human podcasters. Yep, it's like the sound of thousands of snapping shrimp. Total tedium. And yet he's got big numbers, I bet. I'm not bringing it back up, but I'm just saying, I bet he's got big numbers. Sean Ryan. Whew, bull ring. Don't worry, he's former CIA. Oh, I went away? Well, that's weird. Hold on a second. Now I know why he said, what the F? I don't know why that'd be, but it could be StreamYard. Then again, people say, Davis, you blame everything on StreamYard. Yeah, well, you know. When the shoe fits, fucking wear it. Oh, by the way, the original paper, which is actually better, Inequality and Democratic Responsiveness from 2005 is the paper you want. From Gillens and Page. They also wrote a critique of their own article called Testing Inferences About Oligarchy, where they explore other possible avenues for the data analysis. So anyway, the point is they explore this exhaustively, and there's zero, literally zero correlation between how people vote and what they get. So big surprise, big fucking surprise. Yes, I'd like to say I'm surprised. I'm just not. You follow? All right, here we go. Let's go get rid of that. Remove from studio, stop screen, and let's add a little something else. Let's go find another video file, shall we? All right, let's see. Creme de la Creme is saying Ned has cancer and he's kicked out of the GE. Wait a second. Or he was cancer. I don't even know. Apparently, Ned is kicked out of GDL. Okay, well, I don't know anything about all this, except that it somehow affects White Pill TV, I guess. I don't know. White Pilled. Oh, yeah. The only thing I have related to White Pilled is... this could be fun. Here we go.
I mean, I'm not building just a website. I'm building a fucking empire.
There you have it. Yep.
I mean, I'm not building just a website. I'm building a fucking empire.
Remember that? All right. That was New Year's Eve on NNR show. Nice. Other than that, I know nothing about it. I don't get any action on White Pilled, so I kind of gave up on it, but... oh, not White Pill, GTP. Oh, I see. Okay. Huh. Well, that's okay. It's time to go. I guess I can't ask Ned any more questions about GTV. Not that I have a ton of questions, but All right. What do you say we look at this Curtis Yarvin exposed business as an anticipatory set to the older Curtis Yarvin audio I have, which comes in. Boy, that clocks in like 4 years ago now, I think. And this is when he was freely admitting his deep state connections by way of his parents, you know. But yeah, anyway, let's just see what this is about.
Actual godfathers of the so-called new right.
Curtis Yarvin.
Curtis Yarvin.
Curtis Yarvin.
Curtis Yarvin.
Operating in the shadows of the internet, needless to say, is a man called Curtis Yarvin.
This is Curtis Yarvin, the self-proclaimed intellectual.
I'm an intellectual.
And in this video, we will go over how this so-called philosopher has influenced the ideologies of some of the most important...
See what I mean? He's just douchey. He says things like that. I'm an intellectual. He often speaks about himself. I'm someone who gathers a lot of information and then synthesizes it for you. You know, one of these guys. He finds himself terribly fascinating. And I personally never got it. His elite theory. And he'll go on and on about the elite. You must appeal to the elites. Here's how we do it. There's no real plan ever, by the way. He's not plotted an actual plan. He's just writing Substack articles and people go, oh, yeah. That could be the way.
Rich and powerful people in the world.
When you use the word democracy, of course, you're using a very, very loaded and complex word.
One suspects the democracy, whatever that means.
What meaning does democracy actually have?
Just
exactly none, which is what we figured out. Where have you guys been?
Like so many other rich people that are born into the upper class, Yarvin is no different. He was born into a wealthy family in Brooklyn and says his household was very liberal leaning. In multiple interviews where he talks about his childhood, he discusses how his grandparents that were Jewish Americans claim themselves to be communists. Remember that he calls them that because he feels very strongly about communists and their existence in the world. His father worked for the U.S. government as a foreign service officer. 15 years old, he joined the
college. By the way, we have a Jew who hates communists. Wow, you've never met a Jew like Curtis Yarvin. And he's one of the good Jews because he hates commies.
College of Johns Hopkins University as part of the Mathematically Precocious Youth. If I had to guess, being 15 years old in a math program, it's probably not the best situation to make friends in college. I don't know if this plays a part in him transferring, but he ends up at Brown University in Rhode Island. His parents met there. They got him in on legacy admission. While doing research for this video, I've had to watch a lot of Yarvin interviews, and he never really credits his success to nepotism or the luck of being born into a wealthy family. Having the ability to take chances, such as switching colleges at such a young age, is a direct result of his family being wealthy. And I'd almost guarantee he does not think
connected and Jewish, wealthy, connected and Jewish.
That because he thinks people of low income or non-productive people of society should be turned into biodiesel.
That's what I mean. The people who love this guy are the most cynical assholes. And they do the whole pseudo-intellectual bit, like they act like this guy is really saying something.
Yes, that's literally what he said. After graduating from Brown, he ended up at Berkeley for computer science.
This is something really short. This is dedicated to my mother, who's been to separate with her husband. Cleaning out old files.
In other words, he's always been boring. That's what this is here for.
I feel like Shirley MacLaine. Of course, I was an Egyptian princess. Here are the credit card receipts from Henri's of Alexandria. It's strange, but once I must have thought all these papers were important. What did I expect to do with records of my past lives?
Being in the Bay Area in the early 90s and involved in anything computer related was a cheat code. The tech boom in the Bay Area that took place in the 90s churned out some of the worst people that we see sitting at the top of our country today. To name a few, Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, Marc Andreessen, and there's so many more. Yarvin doesn't last long at Berkeley. He ends up dropping out to pursue a career in tech. Coming from wealth is not bad or wrong. The problem is people like Curtis Yarvin rise to power and then take advantage of people that don't come from wealth. And having advantages is okay, it's just use them to help people. So how did this spoiled brat with no friends, a love of math, and now a college dropout become one of the most influential minds of the modern day? Strap in, because there's a little craziness, but a lot of darkness. Curtis Yarvin was an early adopter of the internet. We're talking 1989, early 90s. The internet back then was not how we see it today.
It spans the globe like a superhighway. It is called internet. The net to longtime users.
Internet is a whole group of networks.
The net is made up of some 12,000 individual computer networks.
What was popular was forums, basically like blogging, except these were dark places on the internet. A large part of these forums was a place for white supremacists to recruit, connect, and build out their networks. These forums were insane. They had terrorist organizations talking in these forums because no one was policing the internet back then. One of the most important people he talks to in his young age is Glenn Reynolds. Glenn was a teacher that sparked this philosophy debate lord inside of Curtis Yarvin, and this would lay the foundation on what he thinks the world would look like now and in the future. Yarvin was introduced to two Austrian economists, Ludwig von Mises and Murray Rothbard.
All right, so enter libertarianism into the picture here. You notice the way this guy covered it, it's a little bit intellectually dishonest. This acts like Curtis Yarvin was somehow influenced by these quote-unquote white supremacist terrorists, which it's a little overboard. I mean, honestly. You're talking about bulletin boards transitioning into web pages that were like the equivalent of MySpace pages. Text walls. You know what I mean? And early forums. So, please. But we'll continue.
Von Mises is a free market capitalist through and through. He believes there should be no government involvement or interventions because that will distort the market and the economy. And
right. Isn't that cool, by the way? People often ask, why are so many Jews involved in libertarianism? Gee, I don't know. It's a position on the political spectrum that advocates zero infringement to everything Jews want to do, while leaving open the possibility of also marching through the institutions so they get it coming and going. Weird how Jews would always be in a position to support libertarianism. It's crazy.
Any involvement in the government will cause massive amounts of inefficiencies. Like every other capitalist, he has extreme criticisms of socialism, claiming that it will eventually take individual freedom and crumble economies. Rothbard.
Sure, except, hey, Curtis Yarvin, Norway, go. Oh, silence. Interesting. Yes, Kick Chef, exactly. Curtis Yarvin promotes individualism to goys. So does libertarianism. That's right. We're all just individuals making per diem contracts. We're free men upon the land. Fuck off. Curtis Yarvin
is an anarcho-capitalist. He believes all government functions and institutions should be privatized. And along with being privatized, every part of the market should be completely unregulated. Because Rothbard and Yarvin both consider the state a monopoly and that private institutions will run more effective and ethically.
How we finally established?
Oh, yes. It's all about ethics. As you know, libertarians are great ethicists. These are the same weirdos that have almost daily discussions of the age of consent, which is like, what are you guys up to? That's weird. That's weird. I can't even imagine an upside to having a conversation about age of consent beyond just saying, like, yeah, why don't we just do, let's just do what the state law says. Okay, there you go. Problem solved. You know, age of consent conversation over. What are you guys doing?
Libertarians, historical capitalists. Obviously, ideas are the key thing. Of course, you have to start off here, persuade a lot of people to be anarchists or anarcho-capitalists.
Yarvin was influenced and entranced by these economists and built an online persona off these ideologies. Because he got into the tech world early and worked as a programmer for a few years, he ended up being involved in a buyout. And that little bit of money allowed him to spend the next few years to just start shitposting on the internet for a living. Enter Mencius Moldbug, the online personality that Curtis Yarvin would hide behind that would spark a new political philosophy called the Neo-Reactionaries.
Okay, dig this. So this is the Dark Enlightenment guy. Neo-reactionaries. Huh. Yeah, but it just allowed him, the seed money allowed him to just sit back and shitpost. But they were sort of academic shitposts, but they were, let's put it this way, they were in, like, an academic guise. But these are not academic treaties. It's a lot of meandering from Curtis Yarvin.
This is where the story turns dark, because he doesn't just use these ideologies to run his business. He expands on them, radicalizes them, and becomes an extremist. Essentially, the U.S. should be run by a king and that we should all kneel before him or else. And the
Ooh, what religion will the king be? What's his ethnicity going to be, Curtis Yarvin? That's weird.
The person he had in mind originally to run the U.S. was Steve Jobs.
There you go. So he likes the whole CEO oligarch trip, except, oh, we'll call him a king and queen and maybe they'll have a big family and they'll rule forever and ever and ever and ever. Now, don't get me wrong. White people, we love our kings and queens. You know, it seems to be a thing for us. I'm not saying that could never happen, but it has to happen sans kikes, right? Otherwise, you're going to have the same old Yu Su story of the Jew whispering in your king's ear, deforming the culture and economy and the civics of your kingdom.
Steve Jobs would berate his employees, had an insane ego, and even deny he was the father of his daughter for years. And he was extremely controlling, which is why he clashed with so many people in his business.
Steve got angry with everybody that worked with him. He was very impatient. He had a vision of what it was that you were supposed to be accomplishing it. And if you didn't do it fast enough or you didn't do it right enough, he definitely got angry.
Oh, yeah, right. So you notice this fantastic journey. Very insightful. Steve Jobs is as relevant as that dinosaur he's holding. And that's true. The only reason Steve Jobs held any relevancy is because he made some tech advancements, supposedly, and he presented an efficiency model for innovation that made him a great capitalist. And we're supposed to worship capitalists. So, of course, Steve Jobs is wildly popular. Right? Lots of bullshit. All right, let's go forward.
Threw things at people, nothing heavy.
Company is called Urbit, and he started this company to try and recreate this.
It's actually Urbit, but don't worry.
Website he used when he was younger called Usenet.
You're building the foundation for a larger and more interesting Urbit public community that will resemble Usenet. My dream of recreating Usenet is like my boyhood dream from the 80s, right?
Usenet was one of the earliest message boards on the internet, but it also had 4chan levels of insanity on it. A lot of weird things were being done and said on Usenet, and it should probably be left in the past. He started Herbert back in 2002, but it's pretty much been useless this entire time. I'd assume the only reason it's still going is because Peter Thiel is giving money to fund it. In his recent post on...
They're just Mao in the background, isn't it? Yes, dear leader. Curtis Yarvin's a shitbag.
On Twitter, he says his idea for Herbert is a place for people with a lot of power to discuss things anonymously. He says he knows people are more likely to say how they really feel if they're behind an alias.
Yeah, in fact, they were doing that, but you don't need powerful people to do that. Powerful people already agree on what's to be done next. This is his fatal flaw in his ridiculous assumption that, well, if ordinary people just make their opinions known, the elites will be responsive. What? Why on earth would that happen? They're not responsive now, and they literally have a governmental obligation to be responsive. What in God's green earth makes Curtis Yarvin think, you know what? If you make one of these elites a king, and then this king puts all the other elites in his court, then they'll be responsive. What a dick.
Quality of that content ticks up another notch if the people in it are properly anonymized.
If you are not willing to say your thoughts in public, they are probably terrible thoughts. People who are in powerful positions...
Listen to this douche. No. Jews drive up social consequences for white people's normal set point opinions. So then you tend to whisper them in the dark, because they drove up the social consequences. Right?
Such as CEOs of these tech companies should not be hiding behind anonymity because they will take advantage of it. When it comes to making choices for hundreds of thousands of employees, their decisions should be public so they can be held accountable.
If Amazon's such a great place to work, as you've said, that's what you hear time and time again from your team, why have your team in Coventry gone on strike so much?
I think it's important to note that we absolutely support their right to do that.
That hasn't answered the...
He believes the U.S. should be ran as a monarchy because he says that's how businesses are run. And I wouldn't even have to make a video about him if he just turned into another debate lord Reddit cringe poster on the internet. However, because he was an early adopter of the internet, his ideologies spread all throughout Silicon Valley and has now even spread into our government, being mentioned in around people like Blake Masters, Steve Bannon, and J.D. Vance.
There's this guy, Curtis Yarvin, who's written about some of these things. And so one is to basically accept that this entire thing is going to fall in on itself, right?
You referred to J.D. Vance as, I think, as a normie. what do you mean?
I would say that the thing that I admire about Vance and the thing that's really remarkable about him as a leader is that I think that he contains within him all kinds of Americans.
He posts so much on the internet, it's the equivalent of trying to keep up with how much Elon posts on Twitter. There is just no way to go through everything this guy has said, so I've tried to hit some major points of his beliefs. Moldbug, remember, he's still hiding behind this name, so no one in the public knows who Curtis Yarvin is yet. Now, Moldbug is writing some insane shit on the internet. He believes that slavery is normal and has endorsed it multiple times. And the reason he says this is because he believes black people are born unequal to white people and they deserve to be treated as
See, now he's trying to get us to agree with Curtis Yarvin. Interesting.
Less than human. Thus, his belief that they make better slaves than white people, so to him, slavery is natural and correct.
So finally something Curtis Yarvin's right about. Because if someone is a dullard, they make a better slave, right? Because they're not constantly cogitating on things and making plans to escape that actually work. Stuff like that. Or at 9 o'clock soon, we're going to get to the worst jobs you've ever had stories.
The thing is that basically the treatment of the freed slaves after the war.
His vision for San Francisco was to turn all of the people that were low income into fuel for the city to run on. Now, he claims to be trolling with some of these things, but then he's also serious with some things, so it's really hard to pin him down on anything. And for San Francisco, he said he realizes that many people wouldn't be able to live their lives.
Oh, he loves this patchwork idea, too, by the way. He's like, hey, just take shit that works and you patch it together. Yeah, but what's the connective tissue obligation. What? What kind of plan is that?
Knowing that their city was run on genocide. So if genocide is not an option, he says to put people in solitary confinement and to avoid them going insane, give them VR goggles. Very normal, humane takes from this guy.
Well, actually, that might be an improvement on prison, but just saying.
This one is extremely dark, but it's important to know how he really thinks, and I don't think he's joking about this. But to continue on this idea of him being okay with violence, he talks about a terrorist attack. A terrorist attack where a man named Anders Breivik decided to bomb cars in Norway. After the bombs went off, he went to an island and shot up 69 people at a workers' youth league.
69.
He did this because he thought he was saving his people with the idea of killing as many communists as possible. This is very much to preserve European and white nationalist values.
All right. Well, that was a dark day in Norway, but yeah, there are definite. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was correct, but if there were communists running your government, I would think that might actually be valid. But okay. By the way, Curtis Yarvin was really only. He was only shitlording about Anders Breivik, as everyone did back then. It was just sort of the thing to do, is to shitlord about this guy. No one really supports the idea of going and shooting children. That's absurd.
Just Moldbug covered this story the next day and said this act wasn't good enough because he didn't kill enough people. He said he should have killed more people on the left, but at least the one thing he did was shoot communists. Keep in mind.
All right, well, to be fair, I read this Yarvin piece. So this guy's being a little, listen, I don't like Curtis Yarvin, but what he actually said was you're supposed to shoot the people responsible, which is not an, I don't think that's an outrageous statement to suggest that you should be shooting the people responsible. This is sort of why we supported Luigi Mangione. We looked at him and we said, oh, Luigi Mangione is shooting the people responsible. And it's a little silly to say you support shooting up an island full of the people who are responsible's kids, right? That's pretty weird. I'm rarely in a position to defend Curtis Yarvin, but this is one of those times.
On earlier, he claimed his grandparents and parents were communists.
10 years on, Norway stopped to remember a day that brought the country to a standstill.
Now, at this point, you might be asking yourself, why do I even care what this guy has to say? He sounds insane.
Because he's the head of the intellectual dork web, and people like Elon Musk and other elites are listening to him. So he's in the ear of a lot of these tech overlords. That's why.
I asked myself this throughout most of my time writing this video, because he is insane and he is scum of the earth. He claims himself to be this sort of philosophical writer that equates himself to the level of William Shakespeare. The problem is, and I hate to say this, but he is important. And for the rest of this video, I will prove how much his influence is incorporated in the future of America.
Damn. All right. Well, we can leave the influence section for a minute. There's too much heavy stuff on a Friday night. We don't want to... We don't want to inspire anybody to put razor blade to wrist, you know, quite yet. Let's make sure that's the very last step. And very soon, in just a moment, we're about to get to the worst jobs ever. I see the Paladin and the YYZ in the his aisle. In a moment, we'll play you guys the F you pay me. It's the appeal for donos. It would seem the F you pay me thing not really going over great, but you know, I have what I have. All right. So let's remove this from the studio. Remove, and let's add instead. Oh, there she is. Well, bam. All right. You better do what she says.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Fucking pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
All right.
Fuck you.
We got
me.
It. Jesus. I need a new mouse over here. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Let me go back to the studio. In 3, 2, 1, add to stage. Ah, there we go. All right, it appears to be here. What's up, Pug to the Lord?
Hey, man, how's it going?
Good, good. We had a few good conversations this week. I wish I knew a magic way to have everyone listen to Sea of Worry, but we may get into that later. Let's have some fun for the moment. And very soon we'll begin our discussion of worst jobs you've ever had. Now, I'm willing to bet I'm not going to win this. I've had some pretty shit jobs, but I know people have had a lot worse. Like if I were a dude working in the Jiffy Lube Bay or something, that seems like a terrible job, getting hot oil on you and things like that. I never had that, but yes. First, let's see. Puglord says, Yarvin is extremely prolific. You need to listen to hours of this guy to be able to summarize his ideas. Oh, yeah, I've listened to hours of what I thought was just Mencius Mobug. Turns out it was Curtis Yarvin. And I'm going to be the skunk at the picnic and say, you know what, I'm just not impressed. He doesn't have much connective tissue between his ideas. It's just sort of, it's a lot of pseudo-intellectual meandering. I'm not saying this guy's not smarter than me. I think he's smarter than me. But a lot of it is like mental masturbation. And he's better suited to be like a coder than someone who is weaving together complex political solutions for today's problems. That's just my opinion of him.
Yeah, well, he actually has some fairly simple ideas. The three or four takeaways I got from Yarvin was, one, he's pretty transparent for a so-called elite guy. You know, he climbs down from the clouds and, you know, gives us fire every once in a while. And he makes the point very clearly that, look, all these Jews and all these guys that you claim to be in power, and you understand from the bottom up, like, how things work. He goes, look, I go to dinner with those guys. You know, his father was an ambassador or a diplomat on some level. And so he was always just going to the right schools and hanging out with all these people. He goes, look, I know all these people you're talking about. You just don't know who they are. And they're not all Jews. And he goes, but there are a lot of Jews. So he acknowledges that there's certain groups that are in power. But he says, look, I'm telling you how it's done. And your old-fashioned conservative nationalist train that you're on is probably not going to get you to where you want to go. And then he goes into some pretty detailed history. He studies who's his favorite guy, Burnham, or who was it?
Oh, yes, James Burnham, the managerial class, yeah.
And there's also a couple other guys that he quotes a lot. I'm trying to think of one. But yeah, if you've read that stuff, and he's read every book on the planet, so that pseudo-intellectual kind of thing where he never touches grass comes from, he's got that annoying tactic in debates that, you know, like, well, have you read this book, or did you, you know, and then, of course, he just names these ridiculously obscure books that are only in his library. And but a lot of guys I hang out with have studied this guy intensely. And he has some good things to contribute. I think he's a monarchist, you know.
Yes, like, he is, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, monarchies are probably the most successful form of government. Like, we're still trying to figure out how to be ruled. Isn't that weird? You know? We're still figuring out how do we build a decent society. And he had some very good insights as to how the communists did it. And I find that a lot of that to be very realistic, because a lot of that stuff occurred in my lifetime. And he simply took all of us conservative Amish style nationalists and just taught them this approach to life and civilization. And, you know, it's pure serpentine shit. It's all about on, you know, this progressive notion that we're all enlightened and the sky's the limit and get rid of the old traditions. And he would just, you know, they're the guys that are interesting at the party. Like, nobody wants to talk to the Amish guy. You know, he's going to tell you about churning butter and shit, you know, and yet these liberal educated elites were the ones that came onto the scene and just started sparking up all the debates with all the varying intellectual outlooks on society and humanity. And, you know, they just threw all of our conservative nature up, you know, like tossing a checkerboard. And just, you know, he gives very good insights as to how they schmoozed the kings and queens and monarchs of the time into their point of view. And he said, man, we won it. The communists won those arguments because we were fucking interesting. You guys were boring. you know?
Yeah, well, this is what he tries to be. Curtis Yarvin tries to be like the intellectual equivalent of modern art in an argument about the merit of art, where, yeah. Yes, he's new, he's more interesting, quote unquote, but this dude is not classically brilliant. He's not on the level of the people he quotes. He's no Burnham. He's certainly no Samuel T. Francis, which he must quote Leviathan and its enemies more than any other book. And yes, what his trick is, he'll quote some obscure book that is only on his library in French or something. And but the truth be told is, if you read all of Burnham and all of Francis, and then add a patina on top of all that intellectualism of filter through the Jew, and you've got Curtis Yarvin.
Yeah, and he's got this notion of the cathedral, which I refuse to call it that. It's more like a synagogue.
Precisely.
How he came up with cathedral to accurately describe the complicated network of self-interested parties. It's like, that's kind of where we get these notions that, you know, people try to say, look, there's no hierarchy. There's no guys at the control levers just making things happen. It's just this sea of competing elite interests that just win the day. And he's right, but the idea that it's just up for grabs and it's like a pachinko machine, like, well, hey, DEI is either going to succeed or fail based on this, you know, marketplace of ideas that exists amongst the cloud people. And it's like, it's not true. They have very set goals. They have very strict agendas. And he does show, you know, he does give some hope in the sense that these guys don't agree on everything at all. So there is a fight. There is a real battle. It's not like the trajectory that we're on is just all determined by a couple Rothschilds. He kind of shits on that idea, and I'm with him too. It is more complicated than that. But
unfortunately, he does simplify a little bit too much for his own good as well, because what he'll do is he'll ignore papers by, we showed this before you came on, by the way, Gillens and Page. He'll ignore Gillens and Page. Here it is. For example, Testing Theories of American Politics, Elite Interest Groups, and Average Citizens. They take a multivariate data analysis approach, and no matter how they look at the data, these researchers can find no correlation at all between what people vote for and what people get. However, Curtis Yarvin is trying to convince us all that if we just had a monarchy, which would be like codifying the elite in some sort of familial structure, or making the top CEO the elite or the king, and then make everyone else who's an elite like part of the king's inner circle or something. Suddenly then they would be responsive to us. That's kind of an absurd idea.
Yes, as if CEOs are responsive to us. They're not, because they exist in that very same bubble where the projected will of the people never gets any attention. The projected will of the people doesn't get any attention from CEOs either. This idea, remember, you got to redefine all these terms and go back. He's using conservative notions, like in the conservative nationalist world, where the CEO was in charge of the direction of a company, like, let's say, General Electric or Boeing. And these people had shareholders that they were responsible to, and the will of the shareholder did matter. Because in a conservative world where they are behaving according to laws of what we used to call corporate citizenship, you know, in other words, these powerful entities like Boeing, they had a responsibility to the people, to the employees, to the product, to the expansion of the business, to international, you know, competition, to make America great, only do it through the lens of that particular company. That all makes sense. Yeah. If that ideal were real, he'd have an argument. It's like, yes, we just want to establish some level of self-interest. And again, we were talking about this the other day. When you shift the incentive structure so that the CEO fails when the company fails. But that's not what happens in reality. And, you know, so the CEO can literally just go, fuck everybody. I know how to turn profit and buy back our own shares and elevate our stock price and then get the fuck out with a golden parachute and leave the company in ruins, like that, you know, vulture capitalist style approach where you just gut the company from the inside out And, you know, the company
Bain Capital, remember our friend Romney did that, Bain Capital. That was his whole style. And yet there's a CEO who had no obligation to his quote unquote stakeholders, right? Yeah, so it's obvious.
Like this guitar company, this is a Japanese version of a Gibson Les Paul. And back when Gibsons were being made in Wisconsin, I'm pretty sure it is. That's always been their home base. You know, you had a couple major American-made guitar manufacturers that were they comported themselves in all these idealistic ways. They were great corporate citizens. They were very very attentive to the needs of the employees. They were a great American company. And, you know, they did everything right. They did everything like a responsible company would do to turn profit and make his employees, you know, a good wage. And they welcomed unions and things like that. So you had that model going. But then you get this new CEO. And here's what they do. They come in and go, you know, well, fuck all this just making guitars. We got to compete on the international stage, and we got to diversify. And next thing you know, they're into Kleenex and toilet tissue and dog toys, and let's just make everything. And they purposely go in there and they steer the company in all these very non-profitable, super stupid adventures that cost the company money. And they do it in the venture capitalist style, which is they find a company that's very liquid, that has great credit and access to cheap loans. And then they go in there and they burn up all their credit, and then they get the fuck out on a golden parachute after they've destroyed the company. So that's the methodology by how they do it. They take a good thing, you know, and they ruin it and they profit themselves and leave the company in tatters.
It's vulture capitalism, which again, we're going to take a break for the worst job ever contribution from Bushmaster. You see him right there on the screen?
Yes, I do. Yeah. We Let's want some competition in here, man.
Yeah, we do. All right, Bushmaster, you're going to have to unmute yourself. I cannot unmute you, but when you're good and ready, go ahead and give us a heads up on that. Let's see.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you well. All right, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I will tell you, one of my first jobs, I was a McDonald's cook, and what was it? It was $3.05 an hour, I think, back then.
Yeah.
$3.35, $3.30. Yeah.
It was in that range.
It's about what I make now. Yeah, I'm doing about the same right now.
Go ahead. You better start saving up those aluminum cans.
Oh, yeah.
No, they ruined that for you. That used to be a profitable way for a good guy to make some beer money. No longer. Yeah.
My dad used to do that, man.
Yeah, you do.
It's like the Seinfeld episode. They're like, we're going across the state line. with all the bottles. Oh, we get 5 cents for each one.
We're going to go to the bottom. Yeah.
Well, I, hey, man, my worst jobs story, it's probably not as bad as a lot of them. Because I know, you know, Dad was Army, so we moved around a lot, but home was Texas and dairy country. And so any of my, you know, if you never had to reach your hand up a cow's ass to see if it's pregnant, then, you know, well, you're lucky. That's just a normal part of, you know, dairy life.
Yeah. And we're going to explore different ways to redefine worst. Like you can have, like you mentioned, low paying, that's a bad job. No, that's a low paying job. Then you have a crappy job. Then you have a job that's like hard and sticking hands. You make a lot of money.
We'll see where Bushmaster falls. Continue, sir. Well, you were in Gators with your McDonald's job, right?
Yeah, let's see. Dad was in the Army. I was 15. Now in Louisiana, this is outside of Fort Polk, so Louisiana, you can get your driver's license at 14. And so Dad bought me a 67 Mustang that was rotted out. It was rotted out. This was in, what, 88, 89? And he's like, no, your insurance and gas money's on you. All of that's on you. You better get a job. So I got a job at McDonald's. Now, I'd been a paper boy before this in Alaska. We were stationed in Alaska. I'd been a paper boy in the winter. Now, that's kind of a hard job. It really is. I really had a bicycle riding around in the snow with a basket on it throwing papers. And I did save up enough money to buy a Mossberg 500 20-gauge shotgun, and I still have it. That was... Damn. That was shit. Shit, that was... That's 40 years ago. Oh, I'm freaking old. The gun still works, though. Okay, I do endorse Mossberg shotguns. I still have that gun.
Master, what's the worst type of job for you? You know how there's that category of job that it just doesn't matter, man. You just can't fucking do it. Like for me, it was sitting in a phone in a little bullpen with the phone book. Calling people up trying to sell some discounted Kodak film processing bullshit. So it's just like you just dial a number, you wait for an answer, you go, hi, I'm with, you know, such and such develop, click. Then you go on to the next person. And
the salesman, I'm really kind to salesmen, and I do my best to treat them right because I know the salesman gig is a hard gig. Oh, and it's a very stressful gig for guys, and I see it in them when they come in and they see me. I have businesses, okay? I'm not going to go into that, but I understand what they're going through. Like they're trying to pay their gas bill, they're trying to pay their hotel bill, they're trying to keep it going, they're trying to stay afloat. They literally, most of the salesmen that I meet. Even for big companies, even for big ones, because they got some sort of like commission sharing thing with the company. That's what I see mostly now. Even your real estate agents, their commissions, it's a commission sharing. I got a kind heart for salesmen. That's a hard job. That's a very hard job. It takes a wealth of knowledge and the gift of gab and understanding people. People skills are important, you know. So the salesman, you know, if he's got a good product, it sells itself. You know, but you see your salesman that they're trying to push a product. The salesman job is a hard job. Let me see. Now, I'm not going to go into the Army or the military. I can tell you horror stories and stuff. I don't want to do that. But I'll tell you, let's see, when I was, I left active duty. I took a National Guard job. And then in the meantime, I still had that desire to serve and do things. And, I can skip all my jobs in college and stuff. They sucked. I roofed houses. I worked in a sandpaper factory. Okay. Let me tell you something.
Roofing? Roofing? That has got to be the worst job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When you're the young guy on the job site and you're the guy that hauls up the shingles to the house, up the ladder, yeah, you're the muscle. Yeah, being the muscle sucks.
Especially when it's hot out.
Oh, no, exactly. In Texas, yeah, roofing houses in Texas sucks. Except now they cheat, man. Now they got these little ladder things, these ladder elevators.
They move them up. Yeah, they just move them up. No one has to carry them anymore.
Yeah, that's like drone warfare in Ukraine. This fucking cheating, man. I don't like that. It's fucking cheating. No, there must be some young kid who's going to, you know, fucking learn what work is to carry those things.
And then
maybe
another young kid to like make a paper airplane and throw the drone over to the Russians or something like that. You know, you know, you it can't be easy. You know,
it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be.
Okay, so
another category, like you got hard work. Now, the one thing I liked about construction, like roofing or stuff like that, is that it doesn't qualify as like worst job, because even if the job sucked and you got to get up at like 6 o'clock in the morning and you're done by like 1 o'clock. Yes, you're working in the heat. Yeah, it's dangerous. But you know what? You get some satisfaction out of that. Like, we put the roof on a school, and now I can drive by that school 20 years later and go, hey, man, I helped put the roof on.
If you do it right, then you can take pride in that. And, you know, and nobody else gets that kind of satisfaction except for the people that did it and that, you know, you did it right. I'll tell you, before I go back to my Colorado job, I'll tell you something about some plumbers that I've hired. Some plumbers that I've hired. I've had one guy had, we were like, we had a leak, and they got a little, I don't know, magnetometer, dialostic, Corbone, detector thing. I don't know what the fuck it is, but it detects leaks. So we got a leak halfway under the house, and one of our houses, and I hired an outfit. And the dude showed up, and like, this dude should have been a fucking Delta Force operator, man. He started digging. He's like, I know where the leak is. I'm going to go under the slab of the house, and I'm going to go get it. I'm going to fix it. I'm like, bro, you cannot dig. This is like me and my brothers when we were in Alaska and kids, and they used to push up the snow out of parking lots and then pile them up like, you know, 20 feet high. And so me and my brothers used to dig snow caves in there. But they used to, you know, snow caves collapse and kill kids up there. But
oh, yeah.
So that was in my mind. This guy's like, nah, fuck it. I'm going under. I'm going to dig it out. This dude got a fucking shovel, man. And he dug a fucking 10-foot fucking cave underneath the slab of the house.
It's insane.
And got to the old pipes and fixed it. I called his boss and I was like, man, this dude, his name is Tony. I was like, Tony's a bad motherfucker, man. I've seen a lot of stuff around the world. Tony is a bad motherfucker. And and he's bigger than me. I'm 6'2", like 220 something. Well, maybe a little more. I'm 205 on the ATF documents. Okay, I want to keep that. I want to keep that, you know, consistent. But yeah, Tony was a big guy, and dude, that motherfucker didn't fuck around.
He can dig like a motherfucker.
He dug like a fucking badger and,
honey badger
and,
Bushmaster, do you mind if we take a moment for Callahan? Callahan may go away soon because he's
I was just going to tell my last, job firefighting and, let Callahan join in. Cause I'm sure, you know, I ain't the only motherfucker around here who's had a bad job.
Goddamn. Yeah, just you stay right there. We'll pull up Callahan now. All right, Callahan, you look a little frozen, but maybe you just are storing an image in your cache there. Let's see how you sound. Go ahead, buddy. Callahan. Oh, no, potato internet gone. All right, well, it happens. See Bushmaster?
I saw him there for a second.
Yeah, we tried. I think he should come back without the camera on. All right, Bushmaster, tell us. You were about to say what was the job you were about to say? I forgot.
Well, after I got out of the Army, after I left active duty, I took a job in Denver, at a steel plant there, Northwest Pipe Company. I think they closed it. I'm not sure, but we made, you know, steel pipes and then coated them and put them in the ground for 100 years, 100-year warranty. Put our pipes in the ground. That business, the competitor is the concrete pipe
companies. And if you want a good pipe, you get a steel pipe, man. You don't get a fucking concrete pipe, and they break.
I would think, yeah, those things must crack a lot more than steel pipes.
The steel pipes, yeah, they had a subarc welder, and they feed the sheet metal, the sheet steel in at an angle and roll it up, and then you get a gigantic 60-inch or whatever the job calls for, like a 60-inch paper towel roll of, you know, three-eighths or sometimes up to a half, but usually 3/8-inch steel. Gigantic steel paper towel roll.
Damn.
That's what we made. And then we painted them with like 40. We do 40-foot sections. And we use big Graco paint sprayers with the big 275-gallon totes with the catalyst and the paint. And then to hit with a gun on it, and it would travel down the pipe, and it would, once the catalyst hits, it goes to like 300 or 400 degrees. I'm forgetting now, but anyway, damn, the paint hits hot and it solidifies. It only takes 60 seconds to dry.
Bake coating. And, yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. 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 There's a lot of chemistry in there that I can't fully explain, but.
So did the steel, did the steel get rolled in at an angle while it was semi-pliable, meaning hot as fuck?
No. It's cold rolled. It goes in at an angle. Imagine when you unroll a paper towel roll.
Oh yeah.
Imagine the angle. So you just take square steel rolls, gigantic toilet paper rolls, of, you know, that are like 100,000 pounds a piece. Feed it in at an angle and then roll it back on itself, and you got a computer guided subarc welder that welds it when the seam comes back on itself.
Ah, I got it.
That's how the plant did that. But anyway, while I was doing that, I still, you know, had the urge to serve the community and stuff. So I joined the local volunteer fire department up there. I'm not going to say exactly which one, but this is when I lived up around Evergreen, Indian Hills, Morrison, Colorado. It was up there, where they film South Park.
Okay. There you go.
But anyway, they've got a training thing where they make a mess of the whole like garage, and then they put wax paper in front of your mask and put you on the, you know, on the oxygen on your scuba, essentially a firefighter scuba tank.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So they put the wax paper inside your mask, and then they make you crawl through an obstacle course.
Oh yeah. I've done this.
Okay. So yeah. They don't give you enough oxygen to reach the end.
Yeah, it's fucking horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big, tough army guy, right? And I found out I'm extremely claustrophobic.
Yeah.
I'm very scared of that now, because you're wrapped up in all wires, and they've got wires and all sorts of obstacle shit and stuff you got to climb over when you're blind. And you've got to get through and rescue somebody, but you don't have enough oxygen to get there. And so right at the end, what do? I rip the mask off and start breathing like that. You know, I found that was, you know, firefighting ain't no fucking easy job, bro.
Hell no.
And, I learned, you know, I already seen injuries and stuff in Iraq, and you know, they train you up on being a first responder. I needed to get my EMTB. I might go back and do that one day if I ever have time. I'll just probably read the book and just buy my own stuff. But
That's a tough one. Late. So we want you to stay there though, because you do have Callahan back. So let's just double check real quick.
Okay, I got one more firefighting story to tell you after Callahan.
And then I'll tell you the story when I quit. Yeah. All right. I quit firefighting after two fires. Anyway, I'm not going to be
probably one of know what.
Yeah, I'm not going to be one of these guys who pretends I'm John fucking Rambo. All right, here we go. Callahan. Yeah. Callahan. Can you hear us?
Yeah, right? Hey, go. Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, you sound good.
I've got a quick story. It's probably not as exciting as these other guys, but I've been like a gas cutter, you know, working at steel foundries, cutting, you know, manganese and steel and all this. Cutting down this fucking 7-ton, you know, mild steel, whatever it was, an old fucking hay baler or something, wool baler. And anyway, it was intricate and it was, you know, complicated to sort of work out how to pull it down. And that's like part of gas cutting. It's you've got to really think about your cuts and how to break something down. But in any case, this truck driver that was a bit of a nutcase, he was dropping off cars and he stacked up about fucking 14, 15 cars, probably, you know, 6 yards away from where I was gas cutting. And blow me down, I sort of turned around because I had my goggles on and shit, and they're on fire, you know. So, yeah. So it was like, you know, I can't move my shit. He could have stacked the cars elsewhere, but he decided to put them there, knowing they were dripping with petrol. And I just turned around, and the whole fucking place, all these cars, I made the newspaper, and the guy was shaking his fucking head at me. And I'm like, well, fuck, I didn't fucking know. You know, what am I supposed to do? But that sort of, it's not the worst job, but I just felt like, you know, there was a lot of pressure and that from workers and, you know, giving me shit about it. It's like, well, fuck, man. But, I don't know. I've got other stories. But, yeah, well, I want to hear the story about the firefighting. But, yeah, so I set fire to about, you know, 15 cars or something.
That does sound like a terrible job, especially with a nutcase driver. So that's fucking wild. All right, let's hear the rest of Callahan's going to stay back there. All right, Bushmaster, let's hear the rest of the story. We wanted to make sure we got to hear from Callahan in case he was having internet issues.
Well, I would say, yeah, the firefighting thing and the discovering that you are extremely claustrophobic, that kind of changes things. You know, it changes you to like, hold on a sec, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to be that kind of hero. I'm not doing that. It takes a special kind of person to be able to do that. I don't mind jumping out of an airplane. I can do that. But, you know, crawling on, you know, 6 feet of visible airspace in a smoky floor where you can't, and you're wrapped up in debris. I get claustrophobic, man. Sorry. Sorry to let everybody down. I'm not that guy.
Not letting anyone down. Firefighters are insane. I'm convinced firefighters they have like a screw loose, you know?
They're cut from a special kind of cloth for sure. But when I was in college, getting my, worthless history degree, my neighbor, he was a guy named, Bill Ed, and we became lifelong friends. And, on his birth certificate, it doesn't say William Edward. This is in Central Texas. His birth certificate says Bill Ed. That's his name. And when we were in college, he lived in the house right next to the house that I lived into, which is on a farm. Now, I had holes in my roof, and I could see the stars through my roof in the kitchen. And this is kind of, you know, where we, bro, I didn't grow up on Mar-a-Lago, okay?
yeah, me either, yeah.
And anyway, Bill Ed was in the next farmhouse right next to us, and he worked at the Breckenridge, Texas deer processing facility.
Oh, God.
So during hunting season, you know, guys would bring in like a little 4 point or 6 point, and he would do a sales pitch and say, man, that's a great deer. That's an awesome deer. That's one of the biggest ones I've seen all season.
Oh, boy.
You should get that mounted. I can mount that for you. So Bill Ed had his deer mounting side hustle out of the processing plant. So me and him, we would drink Lone Star beer. This is in Central Texas, so you drink Lone Star beer when you're poor and in college. And so we drank Lone Star beer, and we fleshed out deer hides. And he taught me how to mount deer and all that stuff. And we mounted a shitload of deer. Anyway, he started getting tired of that, and he decided to join the Fort Worth Fire Department. And he got an offer to join. It's kind of like a union or a secret club or something. You know, some of those big departments, they just, you know, they don't take anybody. You know, you got to have an in or a relative or something like that. Yeah. Now, this is 25 years ago, man. Now, Bill Ed's retired, and he's got his own ranch and everything. He's set now, but back then, so he got in to the Fort Worth Fire Department. And so this is the culmination of my fire department story, which I want to link into illegals.
Oh, damn.
What was happening in Fort Worth at that time, and it's still happening now throughout America, is you get illegals. Now, I think it's not bad on illegals now, but back then it was, I think, more pressure on them. And so what you would have is you'd have, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 of them holed up inside a small house in Fort Worth in Texas. And there was that he joined the fire department. They responded to a fire, and there were like 35 Mexicans in this house. And they got out a bunch of kids. They got out, I think, most of the adults. And then he was stepping over. He was going in and looking for the other kids and adults, and he was stepping over what he thought was baby dolls.
Uh-oh.
He thought he was stepping over baby dolls. This is an ugly story. It was like two or three little babies that he thought was just baby dolls. They were burned up little Mexican kids.
Oh, gross.
So I guess the moral of that story is, hey, stop letting these motherfuckers in. Let's come in, and you come in, you build a family, you build a house, you build a career, you build something, you know, that's safe. Not cramming up a bunch of fucking horde of people where everything is out of control and you got a fire where a firefighter comes in and he doesn't know where he's stepping over a burnt baby doll or a real baby. That's my story. I'm sorry to be crude or anything, but that is a true story.
Yeah, that's a rough one. Now, the truth,
the
most sad part of that.
He did not recover off of that very well. He took that really hard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, the worst part of that is that was Tuber's family who died in the Holocaust.
All right. Well, I mean, if they were Holocaust victims, well, I mean, we'll just throw them back in the oven and get it over with.
Right, there you go. Yeah, just big, beautiful ovens with big, beautiful doors.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Fort Worth is short on ovens. They've always been short on ovens. Well, they never had a need for ovens, you know. So,
yeah. Let me ask you about the fire department. Did you get to the part where you did the chain walk? Where you're responsible for the person behind you as you chain walk. Did you get to that part of the training? They put their hand on the person's shoulder in front of them.
Yeah. What's harder than that is the something called the Denver drill. If you look up the Denver drill, there was a firefighter in Denver. He got caught in a closet. And then they found him, and they couldn't get him out in time because he was a big guy. And it was a small closet. He was trying to get out because he was getting burned up. And look up the Denver drill. That's a hard thing to.
It doesn't have to be a closet. It's any tight space. Like this happened to people.
Right. Yeah.
A firefighter can get trapped in a boiler room with the gear on, and hey, it's a tough time to turn around and get out.
Yeah. Yeah. You get caught on everything, and if you're going in there to save a kid, man, well. That's the dangers you face. People don't realize that, but you know, if you come in there with the tanks on, you're going to get caught on stuff. That's just going to happen. Stuff starts falling down, ceiling starts falling down. You know, you got wires and debris and everything, and it ain't easy. There ain't no just like the hero running into the burning house and running out with the baby.
Fucking bullshit.
That's
yeah.
very, very rare. That's yeah. very rare. So back to the worst jobs. Yeah, roofing houses in Texas. Shoveling shit in a dairy. Yeah, that kind of sucks.
That could be better than roofing, though, right? Roofing sounds like really terrible.
That's way better than roofing. You got a roof over your head when you bring the when you're running the cows through the milk barn.
Just got to put up with the smell. Yeah. That's you know.
Bale and hay. If they're doing the small bales, you know, they could be anywhere from 50 to 90 pounds. You know, like motherfucker, we got 2,000 bales, and you're getting paid 20. You got 2,000 90-pound bales, and we're paying you 20 cents or 25 cents a bale, and you got to lift up 90 pounds. You know, that ain't such a good job.
No,
I did that in college, man. I ain't doing that shit no more, bro.
Hell no.
First of all, I'll die.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, you might not survive.
Yeah, I'm not going to survive that.
Looks like we have Callahan back, sort of. I'm going to wait for his icon to appear, and then we'll have his whole. We should have him here entirely right now.
I'm sure everybody's had these sucky jobs, like cleaning out stuff and cleaning out them.
So when you guys are done, I'll show my cards and just flop down.
I'm sure he shoveled shit and had to vacuum out damn sewers and shit. You know, the guy that's got to get in there and fix a sewer leak. You know, that sucks. But somebody's got to do it.
Looks like we have Callahan. Callahan, you might be better with the camera off, but let's see how you sound. Go ahead, buddy. Oh yeah, real choppy. Real choppy. I think you want to shut that camera down, and that may help us out some. Crime scene. Oh, fantastic journey in the chat says crime scene clean up. That's pretty tasty. We got Callahan. Yeah. Katie's with him there. That's awesome. See that. Now the icon's there. This is good. This would be probably better. All right, let's have him. No, he's muted himself. All right. All right, well, to Phil, until we get Callahan. Looks like we have Callahan.
Yeah, I'm here.
Nice.
Sorry, StreamYards keeps dropping me out. Oops, something went wrong, blah, blah, blah.
That sucks. Sorry, buddy. All right.
No, that's right. There's countless temp jobs. You know, I've been to jobs where a trucking firm was in liquidation. So I spent about 3 hours, water blasting down this truck with all the grease and shit flicking everywhere. And then I finished the job, and they says, "No, we're not going to pay you because we've gone into liquidation and you get nothing by." That
kind of
sucked.
That sucks.
There's all sorts of. Oh, I've got a really good one for you. I worked as as a temp worker at a chicken farm.
Oh, right? Dear.
So yeah, I was like working as a chicken, a chicken farm worker. So you, the chickens, you're putting them in cages and taking them out and putting, you know, new birds in, old birds out, wringing the necks and all this sort of shit, cleaning down the whole place, all the chicken shit and dust flying everywhere with big blowers and stuff.
Damn.
And anyway, this fucking Islander Rarotongan cunt took a disliking to me and he wanted to fight me. And I says, look, I don't want to fight, cunt. It's minimum wage. Leave me the fuck alone. He says, all right, it's on then. I'm going to fucking get you. So anyway, he fucking got me. He tackled, rugby tackled me, picked me up and spear tackled me and dropped me off a landing where trucks drove in and it was just all hard shingle rocks, like, you know, 4 or 5 inch sharp stone.
Yeah.
And he fucking slam dunked me head first into these fucking stones and he broke my spine and split my head open. I've got a scar with like 300 stitches and my optic nerve and all the rest of it was lacerated and split wide open. There was blood pissing out everywhere. So, yeah, that was probably one of the worst job experiences I've ever had. And, you know,
send me this motherfucker's address. Send me his address. I'm going to put it in my black book of revenge.
Yeah, that's attempted murder, literally.
He didn't go to jail for that. And, yeah, that was a work attack. So he attacked me at work. And yeah, he was wet. He was water blasting something down. So he's in those yellow, waterproof, whatever they are. And he come in and I couldn't grab onto him because he was wet and slimy and stuff, you know. I couldn't back up. So, yeah, he fucking smashed my head on the ground and then he proceeded to jump on the back of my back and then punch me in the back of the head into the ground. Bang, bang, bang. And then I picked my head up off the ground with a broken back, C3 spine fracture or, break, whatever. And
this is something for your grandson.
No, that's what I mean.
Damn,
that's crazy. I made it through without breaking any bones. The closest I came was some dumbass black dude I hired to work in my shop. We were under a car together, and he was banging some shit with a chisel. And I was holding the exhaust stable for him while he's banging the chisel. And he hit the chisel and it got out of his hand and it went straight. I got a big scar right here in the middle. But that's the closest I ever came to like, whoa, what the fuck? Jesus. That was it. I mean, that could have been it. Just a high-speed chisel just right in the center of the eyeballs.
Did it stick in your head?
Yeah, and we had to do shit like weld gas tanks and shit like that where it's just super stressful. You're just man. Yeah, welding shit can be using a cutting torch and stuff around fuel. That's always nasty. Dangerous. Like when I worked, if anybody knows what green chain is, that's in a lumber mill. When they cut up these 8x12s, they're like 12 feet long, 8-inch wide boards, but they're wet. They're wet, so they're super fucking heavy. Yeah, they're really heavy. And you grab 4 of those at a time off of a conveyor belt, and you got to put them in a stack, and then the next ones come, and then the next ones come, and then the next ones come. And you do that all fucking day for like 11 hours straight. I ripped all the fucking tendons out of my right forearm and still had to work. I could not like just call in sick. So, that's just fucking hard work. And everybody there looked like Bushmaster. Like nobody at that lumber mill looked like me, you know, a $1.50 sopping wet, you know? Yeah. I mean, everybody, it was just commonplace. It's like me being a linebacker for the fucking Ravens or something. I'd be that out of place. Like everybody there was, Northwest, stock, 6'2", 6'3", 2.5, you know, 100 pounds. Big guy, because it's fucking ridiculous to have. I mean, for me to show up even to do that job is just insane. But my first job, my brother worked out at a shipping yard. This was back in the military. We're talking the $3.35 an hour job back when I was 13 years old. And they had this thing called the Summer Youth Hire Program, where they basically just tell all the parents, hey, look, we got some shit for your kids to do. They can make a few bucks. Keep them busy during the summer. Every parent voted yes for that. So here we are. We're sitting down. My dad's like, dude, you know, you got to get a job this summer. And I had my choice between like warehouse work, where I, you know, which I did. And again, that's the monotony. It's just, you know, you in a big warehouse, just sitting around doing fucking nothing. I'm a clock watcher, you know, by nature, because I had so many jobs where I just kept looking for reasons to get the fuck out of there. It's like all day, every day. So psychologically, I was not ready to sit in a bullpen and make phone calls out of the fucking phone book. That was just torture for me. I preferred jail, in all honesty.
What happens with the young man is he discovers girls, and then he discovers that girls are expensive. And then he discovers that you need a job to pay for the girl, to entertain the girl. And then you realize, like, shit, I'm working so much I can't see the girl. This sucks.
Well, the green chain job was horrible, but my brother reported back. He goes, man, we got the greatest goddamn job. We sit down on our ass, we smoke weed, and we fucking get paid. And we just sit there and rack up hours and get overtime. And I'm like, man, that's the kind of job I want. So the next summer, I signed up for that job. And because I had my choice. And I even got kind of pushed to the front of the line because my brother had it last summer. So there was some, like, a little nepotistic thing. So I'm like all psyched up. Fuck yeah, I got the job. I get out there, and the first day, the senior chief officer comes out and addresses all the new workers. He says, hey, man, last year we got our ass chewed out because we had a bunch of fucking losers out here doing nothing all day getting paid. And that's over. So this year
we got the sweet spot.
Yeah, we got the big boss coming down. He wants to make sure they're going to get on our ass if we don't put you guys to work. I'm like, fuck, man. I just landed in the worst job of my life. So they had to just invent ridiculously stupid shit for us to do. Like, this machinist would have a big, huge pipe rack, probably about 15, 20 feet tall, about, you know, it's built like a pyramid. So you got like a 30-foot base, and it's just loaded with pipe. And he was like, look, we need to take all this pipe out, set it over there, and then paint the rack and put the fucking pipe back on. So it's like a week of just unloading pipe. And we're sitting there, and the bad thing is you're going, wait a minute, why don't we just paint the rack? No, dude, you got to pull all of it. It's probably 15,000 pounds of pipe on that thing. Anyway, so, and then we had to sandblast 8 boats. So they get these huge cranes and they pull these giant military boats out of the water onto these slabs. And we got to sit there and sandblast all the barnacles off. They dress you up in this spaceman costume and you got to hold this fucking huge heavy hose. Then when we weren't doing that, while they were out of the water, we had to grease the cables, these big, huge, probably cables about that thick around that they use for mooring, you know, to keep the boats floating away. And you got to hand grease them. So they'd bring out these huge 55-gallon barrels of grease. You just stick your hands in there, and it's just greasing these fucking cables all day long. It's like it's so fucking filthy and so – and you smell like that shit until the job's done, maybe a week later. And I had to clean out a bilge tank, you know, of a couple of those military boats. So you got to go down into the – you want to talk about being claustrophobic. You got to go down into these engine rooms. And it's just nothing but sludge and oil. And they were like, yeah, clean all that out. So we're just like, I mean, this is just the type of work that you could never pay a full-grown adult to do. I mean, you had to get kids who didn't know any better. And But I mean, I've worked for mechanic shops where they have these old hydraulic lifts that are leaking, which means you got to get a big steel bar and put it under after you jack the car up. You got to put this big steel bar underneath there to keep the car, the truck from crushing you. And every time, and you know, we'd always overload these lifts, and the arms of the lift would just be like sagging down like that. So I spent a lot of time underneath super heavy shit with very questionable lift capacities, and did that a lot. Like, I did that a lot. Even the owner had one leg. Guess how he lost it? Fucking lift collapsed on him. So he's like, yeah. A constant reminder of like, and did he fix the lift? Fuck no.
Oh no. That's crazy. Yeah.
So that's one of the things about working or having a shitty job is you work in these places that are just.
I'd like to interject.
Yeah.
Go ahead, for a second and say if Tuba and AIS are streams.
Yeah.
Sniping us, having the chat.
Oh, who cares?
About jobs and find it funny and they think they're cute. A Tuba, I'm going to knock you out in one punch.
Oh, I'd love to see Callahan punch Tuber. Looks like Callahan cut out. Do me a favor. Hold on, Puglord. Hold on one second. We got to do this at the top of the hour. Yep. Here we go. We'll get right back to everybody, gentlemen. Hang in there. Let's share screen. Oh, there's the kid. Kid's going to guilt trip you. All right. Here you go.
Davis Lerman. Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Davis Lerman and the Right Perspective.
Now it's control.
To support Davis Lerman's Right Perspective Radio, you can now buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/Davis Lerman. That's DavisLerman. The Right Perspective.
Right Perspective.
In doing so, you are a part of the solution. The problem is people not supporting what they want to see more of in the world. Donate any amount you see fit. Your contribution will help continue the efforts of Davis Lerman and the Right Perspective Radio.
This is better. Causing
you benefit. That's DavisLerman. You are a part of the solution. Buy me a coffee. The solution. People supporting what they want to see more of in the world. Buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/Davis Lerman.
Out of control.
DavisLerman.
Who knew what would happen?
Davis Lerman.
Davis Lerman and the Right Perspective. Listen to The Right Perspective with Davis Lerman, 8 to 11 p.m., Monday to Friday on FTJ Media, Odyssey, Rumble, and GTV.
Truth does not fear investigation.
Belief in the Holocaust, as described by court historians, is a form of collective insanity driven by the ravings of subversive Jews.
Davis Lerman.
The purpose of Jewish atrocity propaganda is to obfuscate all conversation about what they are doing.
Davis Lerman.
When Jews complain about anti-Semitism, they're really complaining about accountability. The Right Perspective. The Holocaust narrative is emotional blackmail, much like the lies about October 7th. The reason the Jews invent atrocity lies is to justify their disproportionate acts of violence, oppression, and genocide, the very thing they blame us for.
Sickening!
Thought-terminating cliches are one of the Jews' most effective weapons of mass perception management.
I like that.
Listen to The Right Perspective with Davis Lerman, 8 to 11 p.m., Monday to Friday on FTJ, Media Odyssey, Rumble, and GTV. All right.
Fuck you. Pay me.
We heard you. Mm-hmm. All right.
If I had fingers, I'd be showing you one.
Right.
I'm sure it fits perfectly between Skibbity Toilet and a Noot Noot. Oh, Noot Noot.
All right. So we're back. Here we go. Looks like we lost Callahan momentarily. That's a shame.
Oh, shit. That's fun. Right.
What do you say, Bushmaster? Oh, there you go. Bushmaster was a... unmuted momentarily. All right, Puglord.
I'm sorry about that. I was just chuckling.
No worries. All right, Puglord was mid. He was about to start a story, and I had to cut him off for the top of the hour break. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I forgot what it was. I think we were talking about mechanic shops, but there's low paying jobs. I did a lot of those kind of jobs that were just, you learn, you know, if I had a son, you know, I would send him on all these different types of jobs because, you know, when you just apply for anywhere and get, you know, do any type of work, you learn what you're capable of, you know, what you know, and what you just can't handle. Like, yeah, like the bullpen sales jobs. I could do outside sales. I sold for like rainbow vacuums and shit. That's just weird. You just knock on strangers' houses and you bring in all this shit and you do floor sweeping demonstrations and shit. So I've had those kind of shit jobs. But I've used jackhammers. Jackhammers suck where you gotta bust up a bunch of concrete and then haul it off in a wheelbarrow. Like, and I'm not talking about a truck sitting over there. We had to do it at a Walmart. Where we were busting out all these refrigerator sections in a Walmart, and they took all the refrigerators out, and we had to bust up all the concrete and the tile and then move all that stuff in a wheelbarrow, like through a Walmart, which first of all is fucking huge. Then you got to take it out the back entrance, and then it's to a dumpster like a half, probably another 500 yards away. Just ridiculous shit. I lifted up one of those wheelbarrows one time, and I felt my spinal cord do like an accordion thing where it's just, I can just hear it go.
Oh no.
Yeah. And this is like $7.50 an hour, man. This is like not even basically beer money. You know,
had to be done.
Yeah. There's just jobs that you end up doing. And you know why? It's because you don't go to college. You know, you don't fucking listen to your teachers. You know, I mean, half the jobs I took was because I was just unhireable, you know? So when I first owned my first shop, first time working for myself, having my own business. Well, first of all, I never had to watch a clock. I showed up early, stayed late. You know what I mean? Like I was doing what I really wanted to do. I was my own boss and I was good at it. And that's just such a stark contrast where I would get calls from people getting off work at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, my bay doors never shut. I was just up all the time, fucking working into the midnight hours. Cause to me, a temple of glory and creativity is just like an empty shop at night with just like the compressor running. And it's just me in there, like doing timing belts or fucking pulling transmissions. Like you find out what makes you happy, you know? And a lot of times it's pretty shitty. Yeah.
Well, sometimes when you can see the finished product that helps you appreciate the job a bit more, but I don't think there's no roof that's beautiful enough to make me think I could ever appreciate being a roofer. That sounds like a pretty tough job.
No, it's just, I had never had that experience where like we put in a bunch of THX sound systems inside this movie theater. Yeah. We go in there, we build the cabinets, we install all the stuff and we do all the testing, you know, with the THX tones and shit. And, I was the helper. But the thing is a year or two later, you can drive by there and go, oh, it's just like it's kind of like a coffee table book of your fucking vacation you took 10 years ago. Just something you can always just flip through and look at and go, wow, I remember that. It just brings back memories. You know, you helped build something, you know, and it's still standing and it's still there. You know, so you get that kind of satisfaction. You know, I got no satisfaction from ripping the ligaments out of my fucking forearm at a lumber mill. You know, I got no satisfaction out of selling cheap processed Kodak film. Yeah. It's like, dude, that's the kind of shit I literally, if there was a pistol next to me in that booth, I'm going to have to make a decision like every 40 minutes, man. I'm just like, that's the thing. You learn, I can't fucking do this, man. There's just no way. You know? Yeah, I was doing cold calling for like the Democratic Party, calling people, you know, in the middle of dinner going, hey, you know, we got Obama running or ever, you know, we got the Democratic National Convention. It's just like, oh, you're just looking for donations. It's just thankless, shitty fucking work. And I've done work that mule and oxen are just like, fuck this. Get Andy to do it.
Yeah, they're asking, calling your name.
Doing plumbing work and that pier and beam shit where you're underneath the house. You got like that much room underneath the house, but you got all the little piers and stuff, and you got to either shim the stuff to keep the floors level, or you're just under there. It's just raccoon shit, mice, dirt, fucking worms, spiders. It's just, you're just sitting there laying in all that shit. You're like, fuck, this is my job.
snakes. There's snakes under there.
Yeah, maybe a snake would eat one of the fucking rats. That would be cool.
Well, that would be top of the list for my worst job. Well, all right, I'll tell you first and second. So the first is definitely a few years ago, reducing the soil and the topsoil and sand that's under a house in a crawl space. That was the worst, doing that by hand. I imagine there must be awesome, like, little conveyor belt devices that they have that they would, I guess you throw the dirt on it, it would kind of spit it out into a receptacle, and then you take that away in a wheelbarrow or something like that. But I had none of that. So it was just filling it up in a 5-gallon Home Depot bucket. And then if you can imagine crawling, but you're trying to lift a bucket in front of you. So you end up using this weird muscle behind your shoulder that you didn't know existed. That was the fucking worst. And every kind of disgusting creature and bug worm and everything else was under there. Yeah, that was rough shit. And then the second worst job was, did you ever see those giant folding partitions inside gymnasiums?
Yeah.
Those, they call them accordion pocket doors. Accordion
dividers, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So those things, they have like these planetary drive gear systems up top. So I had a job repairing / lubricating those. And just to get up there is a real pain in the dick. So, of course, we did this thing where you got to press your – the easiest way without inconveniencing everyone was to go inside the pocket. Then you can press your hands against the hinges on the door, you know, that portion of the door now that's all folded up. And then you can put your feet behind you, and you can kind of do this crawl. It's kind of dangerous because you could fall straight down. So that was always nerve-wracking. But the ladder was the best.
Almost died on a roof. And again, it's the weird shit that you never know could happen. Nobody saw this coming. I'm up on a roof on the very center of a school gymnasium. It's the highest part, and they're just building it. They're laying some chicken wire, you know, before they put down the insulation and the roofing panels. So it's you in the ground. There's nothing between you and there. And I'm hauling this stuff, doing this, the death walk across the top of the school. And I'm carrying a bunch of shit with me. And they had stacked underneath, down on the ground, they had stacked a bunch of aluminum stainless steel gutters. And I just hit it right. And as I walked, the sun hit those things like a mirror and flashed me in my eye. Oh, God. So I just felt the heat on my face, and I couldn't see. And I'm up there on this roof, and I'm about to fall down because I'm carrying shit, and I don't remember exactly where the fuck my feet are, and I can't fucking see. And when I do open my eyes, it looks like I'm looking through a brown beer bottle. And so I'm really high up there. I'm losing my fucking balance. I don't know where to set anything down. And if I try to get down on all fours, now my hands are burnt to fuck because what I'm walking on is at least, 200 fucking degrees.
Yeah, so big steel beam.
Yeah, you can get hurt. You can do dangerous jobs. Some jobs are hard, but they're kind of weirdly satisfying. Some are hard and they make you a lot of money. Some are really fucking hard and they don't pay shit. And you have to do it. So that's one thing. And sometimes it's not about the pay or anything. It's just you can't do the job psychologically. Like, I just can't sit in a room, and just fucking sit there.
Oh, it's retail.
Let me mention one thing about going underneath a house. If it's an older house, what you need to do, now it's going to suck, take a metal detector with you.
Take a what?
Take a metal detector with you.
Ah.
there might be Spanish gold underneath these old colonial houses. So if you find it, if you find it under the house, don't say nothing.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Who was an actual migrant worker? You talk about these immigrants that moved in, you know, to do work. Like, who's gonna pick your jalapenos? Who's gonna pick all? Dude, I was an actual migrant worker. I worked in Washington State, and it was a Christmas tree plantation, and we had to plant the seedling. And the way they do that is you're in like this fucking little mini, like it's like an extended golf cart with a bunch of Mexican women on it and me. And there's this big hole in the floor, and you got to grab all these seedlings and you got to scrunch down and you put it in this little wheel that kind of digs them into the ground, and you got to feed them into this thing. But you're hunched over for like hours and hours and hours. It's pretty grueling. It does suck.
That sounds horrible.
That sounds like a guy named C6 Steve. He's got a song called Wenatchee Blues about the apple picking labor camp up there.
Yeah,
that sounds terrible too. Yeah, all that stuff. I did a little potato picking summers way out east on Long Island, and that was no fun, but I wouldn't say it was the worst, because you know, you could dress appropriately, make sure you have a hat on, and put sunscreen on the neck. But yeah, I had the red
Long Island on Long Island.
Yeah, yeah, and I had the red neck.
David, I look, when I graduated high school, I went on a trip and I took my girlfriend up to Yellowstone, and we were camping. The Yellowstone was totally crowded. And we got a place. We found a campground where we could pitch a tent. It was actually on, I think, in Idaho. It's on the most northern, the only place left available in Yellowstone. And there were some B-52 pilots, not B-52, B-2 pilots. There were some young guys that were B-2 pilots. Dude, this is 25 years ago, okay, man? This is a long time ago. But they said they were from Long Island. And they said, yeah. All we got, no, Long Island is nothing but potato farms. I'm like, what are you talking about? Long Island's potato farms? That's New York. No, there ain't no damn potato. And he's like, yes, there's nothing but potato farms up there.
Oh, yeah.
Idaho.
So a lot of people don't know that, you know, northern Long Island is actually pretty rural.
Oh yeah, Long Island it's got a fork at the east end, and so you can either go to the northern fork or the southern fork, and particularly the northern fork is quite rural. Yeah, for example, I grew up down the road from a peach farm. Of course, that's probably now a strip mall or something, but it was terribly rural. So when I moved here to Delaware, it sort of felt familiar. But I had to drive an hour and 15 minutes to get into New York City. That's how far it was.
Yeah, Bushmaster, you've mentioned three places now that I've been. You got Texas, you got Alaska, and Long Island. I wonder how many other places we've all been to. But the worst kind of jobs, man, are the dangerous ones. And you know what sets them all apart? If you're under pressure by an asshole boss, or you're just in that weirdly corporate retail world where your job is basically just to look busy, like you can't fucking relax or sit down or chill out.
Yeah. There's that. Heavy equipment, you know, when you're working around heavy equipment and equipment operators, that makes a higher level of attention, and
yeah, but I'm talking about
especially in the north. Yeah, the north, especially.
All you gotta do is stock fucking Barbie dolls and shit, you know, and then there's nothing to do. So you wander around the fucking store like an idiot, just praying for your next break. You know, it's just that it's the enduring of the time ticking by all day, thinking, what the fuck am I doing here? And you can't leave because you do need the paycheck. You know what I mean? Exactly. So there's that to me is the shittiest kind of work. And it's not the most dangerous. It's not the most, you know, it pays worth a fuck. You know, it's just horrible work. And just, and you know, there's probably places where I'll never forget the smell of those places, because it's like you just sit around and smell the place. And each place has like an individual smell, and you can't get it out of your brain. If I ever walked into a Toys R Us again, I would just like smell that, and it would just bring back all those shitty fucking memories.
Well, here's another thing, you know, that kind of lends into what we're talking about. You know, some of these, you know, mechanical, heavy equipment type of jobs, construction type of jobs, some of these other things, we are going to run out of people to do that, because Nogs and Pajits are not going to be able to do that. They're not going to be able to perform that function. That's just a fact.
Most people just, they've moved on. Again, it's like we used to have payphones. Now we just don't. Nobody has a payphone. Nobody has a phone on their wall.
Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the physicality of the job. And you know, there, you're not going to find a 19-year-old Pajit to carry shingles up a roof. You're not going to find somebody to clean out cesspools, you know, a Pajit or a black. They're not going to do it. They cannot do that.
You think they can't do that? Well, let's see a nigger maintain the internet backbone for the East Coast.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's really not going to happen. And I've got a real problem with finding young people to work. And I don't read job applications anymore. My wife takes care of all of that. We've got a couple problems here. Main problems with the job application thing with young people. And that is, that's, they can't write in cursive. That's a big problem.
Okay. Yeah, that is a bit odd.
Well, that's the reason for the job application, is because it does kind of prove on some level you can read and write. I was, I found that out by going to a place, and I said, look, I'm out here looking for work. I've got about 10 applications. I'm just going to grab this, go home and fill it out and return it the next day. They're like, no, you got to fill it out here. I go, well, why do I need to do that?
Yes, exactly. Yes, because they want to know right then. They don't want to mess around. They don't have time to mess around.
Yeah, well, can
you write in cursive? Then that means you probably are literate, and we could probably work with you.
Yeah, like that's how low the bar is. And it's like my mechanic teacher back in 1990, I was going to college and I took a class in automotive. And the automotive teacher was like, that was like his first day opening welcome to automotive speech. And he mentioned, he goes, look, cars are getting complicated. Now, he was thinking it was going to be because of the complexity and the technology. But he said, there's another problem we're going to have, and that is by the time you guys are ready to retire, there's not going to be a class full of people like this waiting to take your place. You're going to find
Pug
out.
Pug Lord, you're hitting on something that's bigger than you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The replacement workers of good jobs that keep the economy running and keep industry running, that flow of workers is diminishing by the minute.
Yeah.
Literally. You want to build something, then you cannot have some green-haired faggot. And I was in the grocery store today, and I was looking over, and one of the checkers, he looked like a good young white man, long hair, all color green. I'm like, dear God, where is this man's father? Where is this man's father? This is a long-term, slow-kill death knell to our country. That's exactly what is going on.
I've been talking
we need more Boy Scouts, and just More boxing clubs? I don't know.
This is where it gets complicated, man. It's because we like to categorize in things in terms of like IQ, ethnicity, shit like that. But man, there's another element that we just don't have control over. And that is like, what made you and I get out there and just start doing work? You know, because like you said, there's guys out there that were that are our age today, like when we were starting out in their mid 20s or early 20s, they just won't do it. Like they don't. It's like it would be like, you know, like I mean, I would have worked on a skyscraper washing fucking windows if I had to. It's like there was no job that just, you know, if you hired me, I was going to do that job, like whatever. It just didn't matter.
Yeah.
The sky was
the limit. Yeah, of course.
My dad
didn't know all of this stuff. My dad did not know how to tell me how to do it. My dad was a good man.
Yeah,
but he didn't tell me, "Hey son, there ain't no such thing as a bad job. There's only such thing as doing a bad job at your job. So you do a good job at whatever job it is." And
college guys talk about their nightmare stories of jobs they had in college. The moment they got out of college, you know, they lost all their stories. You know, they don't have, you know,
as if the bad jobs don't continue. Listen, you got your house. Somebody's got to do the fucking laundry. Somebody's got to do the dishes. If you're too good to do your own goddamn dishes, well, fuck, you ain't good enough to work nowhere.
Dude, don't bring that up. Look at this fucking empty box. Dude, you know what?
Okay, it's... Yeah. I'm a dishwasher repairman now.
I had the refrigerator
in there?
Go out. I had the refrigerator go out. I had the fucking dishwasher go out. I had everything around me fucking breaking for like 4 days straight. And I'm sitting there. Yeah, that's why you see the new dishwasher. They're making shit so shitty, dude. You can fix it, and then it just fucking breaks the next time you hit the start button.
It's everything. It's like goddamn cell phones, all electronics. They got a limited lifespan, and it's by design.
We might have had 4 hours of total operating time. My girlfriend picked it up at one of them scratch and dent places trying to save money. And that's cool. I wanted a cheap dishwasher, man. I know how to buy expensive shit. If I want a $5,000 fucking guitar, I'll go buy one. But if I want a $200 dishwasher, you know, I'll do it. But so it's not like I paid Maytag money for that fucking thing. It's just, it doesn't matter. Why would anybody, there's people out there that are totally content to build something that doesn't even work brand new. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It sucks.
Yes,
from
that is the case.
Yeah, and you call, here's the nightmare. The thing you and I are talking about. Okay, so the manufacturer like GE, they have so many fucking subdivisions. It's not like General Electric makes dishwashers. They got all these fucking companies all over the world. They're all mass produced. They got like 20 people designing them on a CAD fucking drawings. And nobody knows, nobody's shaking each other's hand. Nobody's ever seen the finished product. They just build this shit and email it to somebody. And then all the pieces get put together with the cheapest possible screws, the shittiest possible components. And so that's not the problem. The problem you and I are talking about is the problem, the real problem. Why can't I just call up a fucking dishwasher guy, have him come out here, troubleshoot it, and fix it? They've given up on diagnostics. They've given up on repairs. They go, well, did you replace the fucking, you know, the fill solenoid? Well, why would I do that? I've already tested it. It's good. Yeah, I know, but that's probably what it is. Well, do you have anybody there that can test the board? Because the board and the fucking barometric pressure sensor is what I think might be wrong. Well, we don't test any of that stuff. We just kind of, you know, let me tell you, we placed a lot of boards on those GEs. Like, nobody knows how the fucking machine is supposed to function. So that they can sit there and go, oh, okay, you hear that whirring noise? That's the pump. It doesn't know that it's already out of water. There's a sensor that tells it, hey, you've done pumped all the fucking water out. Now start filling it up. And it's not doing it. So, and there's no troubleshooting charts. There's just fucking idiots on YouTube that don't know anything. That's the problem. Nobody knows how the shit gets built. Nobody even cares if it gets fixed. And even the technicians are just there to either sell you a motherboard, because what else could be wrong? Like, that's all they know. You know, and my mechanic teacher, he cautioned us about that. He said, whenever you have a new influx of technology, stupid people will always just blame it on the things they don't understand. Oh, it must be that damn mass airflow sensor. Oh, it must be that barometric pressure sensor. Or it's probably that fucking motherboard. You know, those things go out all the time. Really? Did you test it? It's like, so there's no one there that knows. And the guy that wants to sell you the parts doesn't know shit about parts. So you go to the place. Hey, I'd like to buy
them. Oh, yeah. You call a big company, you're not gonna.
Yeah, that's well, even the local places, it's like, dude, you're the owner, man. Don't you know? Like, there's a few places in town where the guy behind the counter owns the business and has been working on these machines his whole life. That's the guy you gotta find. But like 90% of the other places are just staffed by people that have no fucking clue how anything works or even what's in their inventory. It's like that to me, if we that's the actual problem. Somebody stop giving
well,
a fuck.
Davis, I sent you a song by a great Canadian country guy. It's called I Wish It Had a Gauge. He's talking about women. But it might link into what we're talking about here. You know, keep things simple. I wish it had a gauge, but if you could apply that to women, yeah, that's pretty good. It's a good song. You'll like it.
I thought you were going to do Fresh Flakes by Frank Zappa. That song was written in the 70s, and he nails it.
Yeah, I don't know Zappa. I know my Fred Eagle Smith from Canada, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I got it here now. Okay, here we go. Yeah, we can do this. Yeah.
Go ahead, play. I wish it had a gauge. It's good, man.
I wish they had a manual. That'd be good too. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, well, yeah. You don't get no fucking manual, bro. Not on a woman. I'll turn it up.
Well, I got to turn it up. You saying?
Yeah, I can barely hear it.
All right, I can do that. Here we go. Make sure that's up. And I'm going to the plug-in sound booster. Here we go. All right. I like it better if it had a gauge. I like it better if it had a gauge. Something tell me everything's
okay. One look and I could walk away. There's better versions than this live one, but okay.
Now, I'm going to take the problem that we all see, and we're going to step it up one more fucking level, man. Because you think that the problem is that nobody knows what to do.
You're right there, Obadiah.
All right. Who would have thought 30 years ago we'd all be sitting here drinking Chateau de Chasselet,
Them days, we're glad to have the price of a cup of tea.
All right, a cup of cold tea.
What? Without milk or sugar.
Or tea.
In a cracked cup and all.
Oh, we never used to have a cup. We used to have to drink out of a roll-up newspaper.
The best we could manage was to suck on a piece of damp cloth.
But, you know, we were happy in those days, although we were poor.
Because we were poor.
Aye.
My old dad used to say to me, money doesn't bring you happiness, son.
He was right. Aye. I was happier then and I had nothing. We used to live in this tiny old tumble-down house with great big holes in the roof.
House? You were lucky to live in a house. We used to live in one room, all 26 of us, no furniture, half the floor was missing. We're all huddled together in one corner for fear of falling.
You were lucky to have a room. We used to have to live in the corridor.
Oh, we used to dream of living in a corridor. Would it be the palace to watch?
Okay, they're trying to be the best Mexicans. This is a Mexican contest here.
Yeah. Before we knew there'd be a Mexican contest.
It's only 3 minutes playing. It's fucking hilarious. Just guys talking about how they're trying to outdo each other with their war stories. You know, like, what are you doing?
We
used to live in an old water tank on a rubbish tip. We got woke up every morning by having a load of rotting fish dumped all over us. House. Well, when I say house, it's just a hole in the ground covered by a sheet of tarpaulin. But it was a house to us.
We were evicted from our hole in the ground. We had to go and live in a lake. You were lucky to have a lake. There were 150 of us living in a shoebox in the middle of the road. Cardboard box? No. Aye, you were lucky. We lived for 3 months in a rolled-up newspaper in a septic tank. We used to have to get up every morning at 6 o'clock and clean the newspaper, go to work down the mill, 14 hours a day, week in, week out, for 6 months a week. And when we got home, our dad would thrash us to sleep with his belt. Luxury. We used to have to get out of the lake at 3 o'clock in the morning, clean the lake, eat a handful of hot gravel, work 20 hours a day at mill for tuppence a month, come home and dad would beat us around the head and neck with a broken bottle if we were lucky. Well, of course, we had it tough. We used to have to get him out of the shoebox in the middle of the night and lick the road clean with our tongues. We had to eat half a handful of freezing cold gravel, work 24 hours a day at mill for 4 months every 6 years, and when we got home, our dad would slice us in two with a bread knife. Right. I had to get up in the morning at 10 o'clock at night, half an hour before I went to bed, eat a lump of cold poison, work 29 hours a day down mill and pay mill owner for permission to come to work, and when we got home, our dad would kill us and dance about in our grave singing hallelujah. Are you trying to tell the young people of today that? And they won't believe you.
Oh, no, they won't.
Okay, I like it. I like it. That's pretty good. Nuts. Yes, everyone competing for the worst possible story.
Yeah, you had a fire hose. Ah, luxury. We had to put the fire. We had to put the fire out of that spit. We had to cut our veins open, use the blood, put out the fire.
It's retarded. That is wild. That is a wild.
The spirit of what I was trying to do. It's like, yeah, you get into these battles where people be like, man, dude, I had the shittiest fucking job. I had to work, you know, I was on the road all the fucking time. Like, I had some truck driving jobs too. You know, we hauled a bunch of fucking goat heads, frozen goat heads. But the place we had to pick them up at was this place out in Texas. It was a big slaughterhouse. And you see all these fucking sheep going in one end of this huge building. And then the other end was just this constant spewing of like fucking, you know, the end product.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And it stunk to fucking high heaven. And we had to sit there and wait and mix.
Oh, no. I got a story about this. I got a story about this, man. Let me tell you the story, man. Let me tell you this. This is good. This is good. Pug, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but this is back when I was in college in Texas. So I'm coming into Stephenville. Stephenville's a big cow town. So I'm coming into Stephenville. Now in Stephenville, they got this company called the Used Cow Dealer.
Oh boy.
So they got a big giant, dump truck. It's the size of a dump truck. It's a rollback kind of dump truck. Anyway, I come rolling into Stephenville from Dublin on my motorcycle. And the used cow dealer got in an accident.
Oh no!
It hit another big truck in front of him, and so in the back, all of the used cows went splattering all over the road in front of him in about 150-foot radius.
Yeah.
Oh God.
So. There is a market for used cows. Oh God, it was terrible. I'm just glad I was on a motorcycle at that time, and I was glad I did not have to stick around and have to pick that all that stuff up. It was a gigantic disaster. So what these Englishmen are saying is really not off base. Yeah, sometimes that kind of stuff happens. Yes, it does.
A little hyperbole, that's all.
Yeah, my truck driving career started out, I had to take a bus a Greyhound bus, and the company paid for the Greyhound bus trip from Austin up to Salt Lake City. And when the company pays for the bus, it's the cheapest fucking bus ticket you're ever going to find. And that means it stops at like a fucking 1,000 places. So I was in a bus for 74 hours.
Oh, yeah. A lot of nogs.
Just fucking just insane. Just horrible. Like I you start to lose your consciousness. Like it affects you psychologically.
Well,
like,
you gotta fight the nogs to use the bathroom in the back of the bus. It's a life or death kind of thing.
Yeah, and I can't sleep on a rolling fucking bus, which, by the way, I never slept for 4 months straight. You do not need sleep. I was a team driver. When I got there, I was a team driver, so I went through my little 2 days of training. That was the last sleep I had for over 4 months. So we'd go out there, and the first night I meet my driver trainer, and he just goes into the back of the cab and closes the doors. He says, look, I'll get you onto I-80, but after that, we're just headed to, you know, just keep heading east. I go, dude, I just got out of training school. I'm not an actual driver, you know. I mean, I took my driving test, but I just, you know, I'm not a real driver. Don't worry. If I hear something funny or if I feel the truck moving real weird, I'll come out here and help you. Like, this dude was able to sleep with a brand new fucking driver he didn't even know. And we're hauling 80,000 fucking pounds down I-80. And he's just, you know, like how the fuck do they do that? And that was the worst winter in I think of 50 years. It was like the year 2000. And like the worst year. So I-80 was just a fucking ice
rink. Reminds me of that song by, what was it? What's his name? John Chapin, 80,000 pounds of bananas. You got to look it up. you're explaining the song where you go down the mountain with all the bananas that are going to crash.
Yeah, it's just jackknife trailers and disasters.
Yeah, no, it's a was it Richard Chapin, John Chapin? The guy that wrote Cats in the Cradle.
Harry Chapin.
Yeah. Harry Chapin wrote a song called 40,000 pounds of bananas. This is what you're describing.
So now I'm sitting there, and after day five or day six, now remember, team driver means that when I get done driving, he takes over and we just start driving again. Then when he does his 10 hours, I take the wheel. So during that 10 hours while he's driving, I'm laying with my head right above, you know, right above the tractor tires. And I'm just like sitting there. And
I got a buddy and his brother did the OTR trucking thing.
I'm like, I close my eyes. I lay there, but I never lose consciousness. So next thing you know, I'm waking up, I'm drinking coffee. Now I'm driving the thing.
And the OTR thing is actually, I think it's, the OTR driving thing can put you in a trance.
Yeah.
It can really, really mess with you. On another note on the OTR thing, I got a buddy and his brother was an OTR driver and said he drove underground. From East Coast to Denver, underground, all underground.
Those underground.
I'm
places.
I'm throwing it out there, man. The whole underground highway system in America. I'm just throwing it out there. I know Davis is going to be rolling his eyes, going, "Jesus Christ, why do I let these people talk on here?" No, there is an underground highway system, and I only say that because I do know one person, you know, personally, that did drive underground fucking halfway across the country. It is true.
Yeah, they got all these special permits you can get for like military contracting and shit. But the weird thing is I didn't realize you don't need sleep. Like after about 15, 20 days, I'm like, I thought you would die if you don't have sleep. Like I did not know that you just didn't need to lose consciousness. I close my eyes, and I'd sit there, and we'd re-roll them for 10 hours, and I never once lost consciousness and fell asleep. And that just continued and continued and continued for at least 4 months. We got one break after 3 months, and one night we had to stop because there was blizzards so fucking bad up in Montana. But that's another thing, man. You're driving really fucking fast, and you got these snow blizzards, and the headlights just magnify all the snowflakes. So all you see, it's kind of like, you know, when they go into light speed, when they go into warp drive in fucking Star Wars, you know, just all the stars just turn into this shit like that.
Yeah, it's hard to see in a blizzard. I lived in Alaska twice.
Yeah,
it's hard. It's very, very hard to see because you got the snowflakes coming at you so fast. In your windshield, it's very hard to see.
And then somebody will pass you up and kick up all the snow.
But
and now, you're fucking blind, dude. Yeah.
If you're driving at that speed and you're experiencing that, you can come into an accident really fast because it's totally blinding. When the snowflakes are coming at you hard on your windshield, that's the slow down point. That's when you slow down.
Yeah.
That's so when you slow down or stop.
Yeah. And it makes it worse because now you're getting past and they kick up all that shit. And it's like when I got into LA, it's weird. It's like 75, 80 miles an hour.
LA. L.A. is a fucking, God damn it, man. L.A. is one guy.
Yeah, so picture
gigantic fucking toilet bowl.
70 miles an hour and everybody's bumper to bumper. Like, if one guy slows down, the whole fucking city gets destroyed.
L.A. is Atlanta on heroin. That's what L.A. is.
Yeah, so you get
Atlanta, Washington D.C. has the worst traffic. L.A. is, D.C. is first. Atlanta is second. L.A. is third.
Dallas is getting pretty bad.
No, I've seen Dallas from the last 40 years, and Dallas is really bad. It's not the traffic with Dallas; it's the problem with assholes in Fort Worth and Dallas.
Yeah,
that's the problem. It's not the roads. It's not like L.A. It's not like D.C. It's not like Baltimore. The problem with Dallas-Fort Worth is personality and assholes.
Yeah,
they're assholes.
Big cities in Texas are full of, you know, it's different in Texas.
You got Fort Worth assholes, and they're all Yankees moving down there.
Yeah, that's what it is. I was part of the Yankee invasion, technically. Yeah, so I got to get those weird looks because I was like part of that early '80s immigration wave where people were like, Austin is a town where everybody loved Austin from the '50s through the '70s, and then. The city council started inviting all these businesses and giving all these people like Dell and shit tax-free, you know, incentives to build there. And they were just, you know, the place was going crazy.
Well, no, what they did in Austin is they created like a free zone on 4th Street. So you got 4th Street where anything goes. That's what they did in Austin. And then they protected the other streets where you had your kind of Grand Ole Opry kind of places, which they have in Austin, off of 4th Street. And, you know, the cops, they don't care. As long as you're not shooting anybody or showing drugs out loud and on 4th Street, they let it go. But they keep your ass on 4th Street. That's what the Austin cops do. And they keep you away from the nicer places, which are on, you know, a couple blocks away. That's what the Austin cops have been doing for years.
But regionally, you know, it's like I actually watched this unfold because I finally, out of all that time, because, I was a military brat, too. So we moved a lot. So, but when I got to Austin, that was the first time I had sat in one place for, you know, more than 4 or 5 years. And so I got to watch it. I got to watch a town go downhill. Like, I never spent enough time at all these other places to know what it was like 15 years before I got there and 15 years later. So in Austin, I got to see it where I was part of that first invasion where it was already, according to the old timers, Austin was already fucked up. Now, when I got here, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. But you bump into people, then, and it was on the mountain. Hold on.
Yeah, no, Austin is the litmus paper for a major American city.
It's
the litmus paper.
Yeah, but at least they were able to hang on to their Austin.
It tells you what is going on in other major American cities who are several levels above Austin. In what's the word? Worsity? Is worsity a word?
It is now.
No, but
I don't know. Davis can explain this to us because we're kind of dumb. But Austin is the litmus paper for how everything is getting worse in other major American cities.
Well, Austin has a couple
of
zones.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
Austin has a
couple of years ago. Let me just tell you this quick story. I got a buddy, and he was a retired Army officer, and he was. Let me be judicious in what I say. He had command over a lot of the stuff in D.C., okay? So we fly in there. This was 4 years ago. So we fly into my wife picks the cheapest flights there is, so it puts us on a five-hour layover in Baltimore before we go to D.C.
Oh, boy.
Now, listen to me. My dad was at Aberdeen Proving Grounds. So when I was 13 to 14. So we used to go downtown to Baltimore when we were 13 to 14. And run around, and that was when they just started the Inner Harbor of Baltimore renovation project. So they started fixing the Inner Harbor there in Baltimore, and they made it great. They made it awesome. And when I was I'm trying to recall my age properly. When I'm saying 13, 14. And me and a bunch of buddies, you know, from junior high up in, God damn it, man, what's the damn town we lived in? Ponce. Anyway, we would run around the Inner Harbor there in Baltimore. Just run around like crazy kids. It was awesome. And they had that little, like, three-story mall building that they built right there at the Inner Harbor. And they had, at that time, they had the USS Constitution there. Constitution. Yeah, and they got a sub there now. And anyway, it was awesome. And we went to a Baltimore Blast indoor soccer team game. It's called the Baltimore Blast. Anyway, it was just like us teenagers running around and just having fun and trying to find chicks and hitting on chicks and, you know, like 13 and 14 year old kids do. We just ran around Baltimore like good American kids should do. Okay. Fast forward to.
Can't do that
a couple
now.
Of years ago. Okay, my buddy, he runs Arlington Cemetery. He's a colonel. He runs Arlington. All right, well, we're older now, and my wife buys the hotel ticket, If she gets a cheap one, and we got a four-hour layover in Baltimore. So I'm like, okay, yeah, let's take the girls. We're going to go down to the Inner Harbor, and I'm going to show the girls what the Inner Harbor. It was great. It was awesome. So this is during the COVID thing. So we get in the cab, and the cabbie tells us we all got to put on a mask because they're pulling. If they catch you driving in a car without a mask, you get a $500 ticket here in Baltimore.
Figures.
I'm like, okay, fuck off. Take us to the Inner Harbor. So we go to the Inner Harbor. There is nothing but fucking cracked out fucking niggers in the Inner Harbor. This is a couple years ago. I'm like, dear God, I got to get these girls and my wife the fuck out of here.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, they had a submarine, a World War II submarine there, you know, tied up on the dock. They had a ship. They didn't have the Constellation.
There's a nice aquarium. If they had the
Constellation, that would have been awesome just to see that again.
It's a beautiful aquarium, but it too is full of niggers and fish and sharks and stuff.
No, the whole place, they had niggers riding their 10-speed mountain bikes, like pulling wheelies. Right in front of the cops, right there in front of the Inner Harbor. So you got niggers running wild in the Inner Harbor. So that they Baltimore used to be a shithole, and they kicked out all the niggers, and they built something nice and beautiful in the 80s when I was there, last time I was there. And then they turned it back over to the fucking niggers and the drug addicts. And so me and the wife and the girls, I'm like, fuck it, we're out of here. This is a shithole. And I'm like, come on, let's go. Let's go get an Uber now. And I'll tell the girls, get an Uber now. And so I got three like drugged out fucking niggers, nogs, coming up to me, trying to talk to me, make friends with me. You know how they do it. They do a personalization kind of conversation when they come up to you.
Looking for a Lucy.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, I'm your friend kind of fucking thing, you know, and I got to like, you know, keep myself in between the girls and this fucking drugged out nigger and his other drugged out friend and his other drugged out friend. So. The Uber finally showed up. We got the fuck out of there. So Baltimore is even though they've got a magnificent opportunity for a wonderful part, naval park there.
Oh yeah.
Which once was, they fucked it up.
That pug wants to fight.
They fucked it up really fucking bad. Baltimore is a fucking pure shithole, and dear God, do not fucking go there. And D.C., don't get me started.
What you can't forget about Maryland is it's called the Free State because it was the one of the first states to release all their slaves, and Baltimore is the result of this, where the free blacks from Maryland just literally stayed right there in Baltimore. They've been there more generations than a lot of white people who run around saying that they're heritage Americans. Yeah. That's why I suggest that some people reanalyze your set point in history that you romanticize, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the black kids riding their mountain bikes on wheelies right in front of the Baltimore cops. I'm like, we got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
this is it.
Let's give Puglord a word because we're coming up on 11. Oh, no worries. No. We're coming up on 11 here. Go ahead, Puglord.
Yeah, you were talking about black people and I, you know, trying to be sensitive, you know.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. Although he's no little nigger.
Well, no, you brought up an interesting point because it's like everybody understands the difference between like, you know, the urban black guys. And then like I know people that live out in Mississippi and Georgia out in the country and Tennessee. And they're like, man, these black families, you know, that are like pig farmers and been out here for 400 years. You know, they're a totally different breed, you know. It's not like it's this urban, you know, inner city black creation that nobody wants and nobody understands. and it's just, yeah, like you said, they're just running fucking wild, going crazy. Like you go out to, you know, the country in Alabama or something, and there'd be black families that have been out there for a long time. Austin had an area of just, you know, just hardworking, kind of like, you know, black families trying to do the same thing you're doing, put their kids through college, keep their job, you know. And so, yeah, it's these inner city things that are just causing, they're just a whole different fucking breed, man. Just
a lot of problems are compounded and compounded and compounded. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt it's rough. It's rough going. You don't want to go to, yeah, try not to go to Baltimore, everybody. There's no reason to go. The harbor, the inner harbor is not that beautiful. It's not worth the risk, is pretty much the problem. Unless you're going in great numbers and you can keep, you know, the kids and women with you really safe.
But see, I was trying to point out that Austin had one little, had two things going for it that kept it from being like a Baltimore. Because, yes, we had a lot of computer and high-tech companies come in, but we had the University of Texas, which was for the longest time, man. We got between Texas A&M and UT Austin. It's mostly just, you know, white liberals. Like, that's what we had to deal with. We had the older hippies, you know. But they're all, you know, they're all Wall Street guys, or they own construction companies, or they're cattle ranchers, or, you know, so we had the university, which is mostly white, and if you've ever been in a university town that was built around the university determines, you know, the direction of that city.
Oh, yeah.
So we had that as an insulating barrier. And also we got police down here. We don't have liberal police that are just, you know, kissing gangsters' feet and shit like that. So when we did some issues, you know, we got the fucking DPS down here. They really don't fuck around. And the law and order thing is a real thing, you know, down here, other than, like, I only just hear nightmares of, like, California and Minneapolis and places like
Page
that.
Page isn't respond.
You know, where the police.
Well, the other thing is, Jews don't run cattle. Jews can't run cattle. They cannot do that. That is outside of their capabilities. They cannot run cattle. They cannot farm. They do not plant anything. They do not grow anything. And they goddamn for sure cannot run cattle.
I think you'd be surprised who owns a lot of cattle in this country.
Yeah, they get other people to do it for them. Jews cannot do it.
Oh, yeah. No, they're in the catbird seat.
Yeah, well, we got that guy that was breeding the red heifer for the Zionists.
Oh, God,
yeah. He's a proud Texan. Yeah, thanks, asshole, making us all look.
He's a good Judeo-Christian, don't you know?
Yeah, but that's what's cool about reading Henry Ford's book. You know, when you talk about, you know,
The International Jew, you mean?
Yeah, the International Jew. Yeah, he goes through a lot of the histories of this man. These Jewish families set themselves up in every fucking nook and cranny of the world hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago. You know, like everywhere you go, there's Jewish roots. Everywhere you go, it's so ubiquitous. They've been around for so fucking long. And like you'd think that a place like Texas, you know, dude, you got places in Texas that are like just ridiculously all for the state of Israel. I mean, there's no, the people that aren't, I don't know, that's a whole nother show.
That's a whole nother show.
It's like,
that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, you can't equate conservative American Texan as like a place where that kind of shit doesn't thrive. It does. It's in the corners of every industry. Yeah, a lot of these huge cattle ranches and shit, they're owned by Jews. You know, it's like you just can't. There's just no place where you can just go. And where the general populace is just, you know, they got that southern
Puglord. Puglord, let me tell you something, Puglord.
Yeah.
Because I'm from, you know, North Central Texas. You're right. You're right. The Schofield Bible religiosity is very strong in Texas. It's very, very strong. You are right. It is that the Jew gets special favors. Like, they don't even have to have Jesus. They don't have to have Jesus. They get their own judgment. This is one of the things that I've heard throughout Texas and throughout the South and throughout all, you know, Baptists and Protestant churches in America is the one sermon. They got one famous sermon, all of these churches together. They got the grand old tour of hell sermon. So here we are. We're going to take a tour of hell. And in this cell over here, we see Pontius Pilate. And he's washing his hands. He's trying to wash his hands off of the sin that he committed for. And then in this next cell, we have Adolf Hitler. They always put the Adolf Hitler cell in this tour of hell sermon.
Oh, of course.
And every single Protestant and Baptist church, Southern Baptist, First Baptist, they always, all the pastors, they get these sermons sent to them.
Of course.
And then here in this cell is Adolf Hitler. And here he is dying the same death of the gas chambers that he killed all these Jews. It's a goddamn travesty, man. It's a church economy. What is it? I'm missing the word. I'm sorry, Davis.
It's pay for play, and the Zionists backed the Schofield Bible, which added footnotes, yes, which made Christians believe that, yes, they had to support the state of Israel. And this was published by the Oxford Press in like 1909 or something like that.
Yes,
the world
yes,
Zionist
I'm
leaders,
telling you.
They and manipulated. The Southern Baptist
in I can't count the times. This is what a preacher does in a Protestant or Baptist church. As he goes back to the good old tour of hell sermon. You know, it's a commodity. It's a commodity for sermons. And they use it when they can't think of something else to preach on.
Yeah. Well, what I was saying, yeah, they get sent, it's like curriculum. It goes out. And sometimes
curriculum. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, better word. I'm sorry. You're smarter than me.
How that translates into reality is that, let's say if I decide to move out of the city and find some property out in some small town, if there's a Baptist church there, you can pretty much assume that that there's a strong Zionist bent within the community. You'd have to.
Well, you can't paint all Baptist churches with the same brush. Go in there. If they don't name the Jew. Because there's a lot, I know a lot of the churches around here in South Georgia, they name the Jew. They do.
Yeah.
A lot of them. They're independent Baptist churches, and they name the Jew. And they teach their people. And a lot of their pastors come on here and be like, they blow all of us away with what they say. White power, Christian power. We love everybody. A lot of these southern churches here down here in Georgia, they will go off and they will not give any grace to the Jew, none at all.
Texas is weird. Like you know, people say, "Oh man, you live in Austin; it must be like a liberal hellhole." Man, I'm 5 miles away where they, you know, from a town where they got the Confederate flag in front of the courthouse. So you have all of these extremes and all these pockets of, you know, conservatives and liberals and
Yeah, you're not going to find it in a big church, a mega church. You know, those are your what's that fucker's name? The Dave did the money thing. Dave
is insane.
Dave Ramsey. Yeah,
Dave Ramsey. Yeah, I went through his course. Yeah, I did his course, and like, well, he's kind of right. Now that I look at it, I was like, you don't name the fucking Jew, and you're really not arming a Christian to actually get ahead. What you are teaching them to do is to fit into a Jew usury system. That's what Dave Ramsey does.
Mm. Yeah. He makes you a well-behaved
He makes you a well-behaved goyim. That's what he does.
If you're explaining that debate,
you know, he's not a Christian.
You couldn't
explain on Nick's show with that debate. He's like, look, you got Christians and then you got fucking everything else, man. Because one adheres to a very strict interpretation of history and the other is just all over the fucking map. And what Jews have done is they've allowed for Christianity and the modern state of Israel to just get blurred into this one thing. And, you know, you either are a Christian or you're a fucking Satanist.
Pretty much.
Those are the only two teams left on the field right now. And so that's why, you know, introducing, you know, when you introduce a lot of the real history of the Catholic Church and Christianity, it really does blend beautifully with everything we're trying to do, but you just can't get over that gap. Because people are just going to have that problem, you know, with anything religious, especially anything Catholic or Christian. But once they see it for themselves, like, okay, you got two teams, you know, which one are you going to be on? It really does reduce the choice.
Well, yeah. There's that. There's that. And
yeah, good
like,
and even.
Like, I do have to agree with Davison. Is like, what is going to advance the interests of white people? And I think Christianity does.
Well, and doing good shit is a good place to start. Like David and I had this conversation. We're so far into our own end zone. We got a lot of climbing to do out of this hole just to break level ground.
Oh, God. You know,
we talked about it a little bit tonight with just what happened to the fucking people. Why are, you know, you own a construction business or a mechanic shop or a plumbing business. Why is it so fucking hard, you know, to just get young, smart guys that want to work with their hands and learn a trade? Like, where is that fucking spirit?
Well, here's the thing. If I can find those young men, if they work for me for 10 years, I'll give them the business. I'll give it to them.
I agree. There's a lot of us out there that have that same thing. Hey, look, I'm just looking for somebody to pick up, to just watch me do what I do, and if you take care of me, yeah,
I'll take care of you. But take care of me because I'm getting old.
Yeah,
they don't
understand
it. Then you can have it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go, Pug Lord.
It's a fair deal. Take care of me and. If you marry one of my daughters, I might give you two other places.
The dowry.
The dowry.
Yeah.
No, I literally have a dowry. I've got a dowry.
There you go.
Okay, she might be a little plump, but she graduated high school in 2 years, and she's smarter than you, fucker.
Yeah.
So how about you show how much you can work? Because if you can't do that, then she's not going to be impressed. So I got a hot one and I got a smart one.
Well, they're both beautiful in their own way, I'm sure. So let me do this real quick, gentlemen. I just want to add that, of course, that's been on the screen. I just want to play the. Here's the liner.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Fucking pay me!
Davis Lerman.
Fuck you, pay me.
Davis Lerman.
Ah, there you go. And I feel like I should also give an example so people better understand the Schofield Bible thing and the implications real quick. So here's an example of how the Schofield Bible works. So when I heard you, Jesus. All right, hold on. Here's an example. I'm trying to find this here. I've got my Schofield Bible. Hold on. All right, here's an example.
Now that's funny. That's funny.
For reviewing. So God made an unconditional. He made this unconditional promise of blessing through Abraham's seed to the nation of Israel.
Is that funny. In the margins?
No. I'm just telling you the context of what I'm about to read. So here's the idea. At the time of this writing in the Bible, Israel didn't even exist. So when they talk about God making a promise of blessings through Abraham's seed to the nation of Israel to inherit a specific territory.
Yeah, that's in Genesis. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So this is get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into a land I will show thee. So that's a call from God to Abraham in Genesis 12:1, right? And so it's coming
out of Sur.
He's instructing him to leave his homeland and family to go find a land that God would reveal to him through some, revelation. But here's what's important. In the Schofield Bible, listen to what it says as a footnote to that very simple Genesis 12:1 piece. This is what the Schofield Bible says. There was a precise blessing upon those individuals whose nations were blessed, nations who blessed Abraham's descendants, and a curse laid upon those who persecuted the Jews. And in this footnote, it says, to the Gentiles, I will bless them that bless thee. Those who honor Abraham will be blessed and curse him that curses thee. So this was a warning literally fulfilled in the history of Israel's persecution, supposedly. And the Schofield.
That's a key thing.
It has invariably dealt with the people who persecuted the Jews as a result of these modifications. Anyway, it goes on and on and on. The point is, the Zionists added this footnote so that all of America's evangelical Christians would believe that they had to support Israel no matter what Israel does.
And this is just one footnote
I got highlighted. The Schofield Bible.
All of America grew up with that. They all grew up with that. Oh, now, yeah. I'm gonna rewrite my own King James with my own foot.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I'll do that too. I could write my own and say just read what it says.
Leave thy country of thy fathers and go to Norway.
Yeah, well, the white people should go to Norway, but yeah, I'm afraid it's a little far
away. I'm going to try to get this in print, but I'm going to instruct all white men to go to Norway, maybe Finland, and then the catch there is like, okay, spend 6 weeks. If there's too many nogs, run away and then go find somebody else where there's, blonde, blue-eyed girls.
Let's do this, everybody. I like that.
We can print our own Bible. I will do it.
All right, let's do this.
I'm not fucking with you. I will print my own Bible with my own footnotes. Norway. Okay, we're going to make exceptions for a couple other places.
Like Finland.
But they need to be able to do basic math, okay? Like one kid plus two kids equals how many kids?
I like that. But all right, so listen up.
That's all the math the girl needs to know.
All right. Well, Bushmaster, we're going to be calling it a night very soon, but I do want to give Puglord and then yourself the final word for tonight. We started one conversation. It led to another one, and that's excellent. So I just wanted to give let's give Puglord the final word from himself, and then we'll give Bushmaster his chance to salute the crowd. All right. Go ahead, buddy.
So the original idea was, to just, bring up, kind of like that Monty Python skit, just the idea that, when I look back, I've got all these great stories to tell from all the shitty jobs I had to take. And it does do something to you. But it also sets a precedent that you now have an expectation of your country today to kind of, you know, you should expect. There's no generational continuity. Like, I don't talk to younger kids that are doing what I did when I was young. And at some point in time, you got to say, you know, I'm a big believer that we're going downhill. And that's, you can't get more evidence than that. You know, when young kids are supposed to want to work hard and do any fucking job. And in your 20s and 30s, when you don't have a college degree, when you don't have a lot of time, you don't have rich parents or, you know, a father who just brought you into the business. When you don't have any of that structure and you're out there just looking for anything and everything, it's a character test. It's a character test. And once you have that because you did it, then you get to look around and see where it just doesn't exist anymore. You know, and that's so, you know, I'm more of a, what is the state of our country and what do we do about it? But the evidence is there, and you can tell, because I can tell my stories of my jobs and I will not get the same feedback back. So I took a trail that a lot of people didn't, you know, and more people are not. And that's not fucking good. So if you're listening and you're a young man, go out there and get some fucking shitty jobs, man. Like, fucking survive. Make it. Save your money. And don't be too fucking proud, because having years of shitty jobs teaches you shit that you just can't get from going from getting good grades in high school to getting into a college to working for some company. It's like that path, it disconnects you from everything that made this country great.
Well, just before we go to Bushmaster with his final salute, I will say that there's a term called the social contract, and it would seem that America has broken the social contract. So this is undeniable that the reason people aren't the reason youngsters are not motivated in the same way that perhaps you were and Bushmaster was, is because they don't see any return on their investment, right? So this very much is demotivating to them to ever want to do anything difficult that would require the other end of the social contract to exist. So this is what's actually happening. So this is the long-term consequences of the situation we have. Yeah. All right, Bushmaster, what do you say, buddy? Final word.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Oh yeah, we hear you, buddy. Go ahead.
Well, okay, let me touch on a couple things, like what you just said about young people not being what did you say, Davis? Young people were not going to be.
They understand that the social contract has been broken, and since there's no social contract, we can't expect them to engage as if they're, you know, laboring under a contract. So this is why they're demotivated to be good Americans, is because there is no America. The social contract has been violated. It's been broken. So this is why.
You said that better than I could. I would just offer that there is no labor market. The labor market has vastly disappeared for young kids coming out of high school. And what I have seen is you got young kids that actually cannot write in cursive.
Oh yeah. You mentioned, yeah, that's a problem, I suppose. Yeah. Unless they're typing or word processing anyway or something, but yeah, cursive would be handy.
You know, we could bring back the German model, which is you graduate from high school and you know, like we have the ASVAB test for the military.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Next thing you know, you do well and you got a recruiter coming down to your school and you're filling out stuff and he's making promises. Hey, you put in 4 years, we'll pay for your college, shit like that. Well, in Germany, you get guys from like Bosch or Bose or Volkswagen or Porsche. And they dragnet the schools looking for machinists, looking for technicians, looking for computer guys. And they say, look, here's the deal. You graduate high school. We own you for 10 fucking years. You're going to work for us. We're going to pay you
out. It's actually an unfair agreement. Especially you said the word machinist.
Yeah.
You're talking about a machinist.
I'm addressing
the idea. A machinist. Yeah. A machinist is worth more than an engineer.
Yeah, I get all that. But my point is that everything can turn around by simply shifting the incentive structure from just letting everybody go through a guidance counselor and end up at fucking Burger King for 15 years. Instead, do like the military used to do, which was they'd find the best and the brightest. They'd find good people. They would offer them a contract. When you get out of high school, you have a job. And we're not going to stop teaching you until you are a master in that trade, whatever that trade may be. And so everybody is guaranteed. So by the time they're in their late 20s, they are a master at something. So you don't have 30-year-old guys walking around with Burger King experience. You don't have homeless people. You don't have an uneducated masses. You don't have people on the dole who are just needing unemployment all the time. So it's
built. Well, hold on a second there. Hold on a second.
Oh, okay. What?
Burger King experience? That ain't bad experience.
Okay.
Because if you can be in a place where you sell 1,000 burgers a day, you better have your shit together.
Well,
you better be able to roll food out.
Yeah, but my point is that it's not cradle to grave. It's just a system in place where when you graduate from high school, you're not left on your own to just figure shit out. There is another company.
And you're exactly right. And that is what I see with hobo blacks. A lot of hobo blacks who have been left out to the weather. And I don't like that. You know,
talking about white people.
You know, you call me a racist, whatever, but I don't like seeing people like living underneath a umbrella out in the woods. I don't like that. And
I don't know.
I'm saying it's not that hard to picture a world where a president and in one term can simply turn things around by saying, hey, IBM, Texas Instruments, you know, Tesla, whatever. When these kids graduate from high school, we're going to shift over from just letting them run wild and figure shit out to adopting them. And we don't let go of these kids. We don't let them fail because we are going to teach them to be very good at something, and we're not going to let them.
I think Ross Perot and T.I. and Microsoft. I think they already had all this planned out. What you're talking about, it was already planned out. They already knew what they were going to do. They already knew where they were going to build their plants. They already knew they were going to employ. They NAFTA already knew.
Yeah, that NAFTA GATT shit was terrible for America. And Puglord is saying the opposite. He's saying, like, yeah, if we had invested in America, we had an apprenticeship model, like a lot of these problems would be solving themselves, you know.
Yeah, because we just wouldn't have it. And that's a simple one law chain.
But that.
Oh, yeah.
So because when I look back, what I think of is, you know, it would have been cool if when I got out of high school, I would have had an option for college and I would have had an option for Ford Motor Company or something like that to say, hey, look, we're going to teach you to be a master mechanic. After 10 years, you're free. You can do whatever you want to do. But guess what? You're a master at a trade, at something. And therefore, if you want to, then you can get married, you can have kids, you can put your kids through college because that infrastructure exists, you know. And Davis and I were talking about how in Austin, you and your buddies could actually form a band, get good, practice, and there was 100 bars out there that would pay you a living wage to just be a musician. So it was not a dumb idea to practice your instrument, learn to be good, and because there's jobs out there for you. You know, you could actually do that. There's record contracts. There's private labels. There's people that would be like, we're going to provide an infrastructure for what you want to do so that, like right now, I just see that infrastructure has just been removed and yanked.
Yeah.
That's what's causing our fucking problem here.
In your analogy, the NAFTA GATT is the DJ.
Yeah.
The DJ came and all the musicians out of business.
Okay, Puggy, I don't want to derail the conversation that we're having here, but I was just going to go into the Wayback Machine. You're talking about Austin on one of my brother's bachelor party things. I actually threw up on a cop's shoes on 4th Street. This was in 98. Yeah, he didn't even arrest me. He's like, dude, get the fuck out of here.
The good old days.
Yes, that's when cops are cool. They're like, yeah. I was like, oh shit, I'm sorry. Let me wipe that off.
God damn.
I got stories, man. I got a store of stories. I don't know where to tell them, but I guess I'm telling them here. Anyway, okay, where were we? We were arguing about something, weren't we?
No, I think we were agreeing on the state of America that we need apprenticeship models and trade work type models, but we don't have that. Instead, we have offshoring.
Yeah, and we're not pointing to pie-in-the-sky utopic dreams and progressive notions. I'm saying there is an infrastructure that we can watch today that has been in existence for a very long time. All we need to do is copy and paste and just fucking do it, and then 10 years from now, the world's a better place. It doesn't take long. These are white people.
No, I agree with you on that. It won't take long. Yeah. I do agree with you. It will not take long to do it. It will hurt our macro industrialization. It will hurt our macro industry. Mm. Now, low level on the street, yes, this can happen very quickly. Now, I will tell you though, I've hired some Mexicans. And you know what? These guys, what they do is they play the Bible when they're working. They play the Bible in Mexican and, boy, that sounds dumb, in Spanish, and it's the Book of Acts. So I hear them working, they're playing the Book of Acts, and it doesn't matter if it's Spanish or not. I understand exactly what it is. And the guy, you know, one of the guys like, I just want to buy a truck. I just want to buy a truck and go home. He doesn't want to be here. He showed me pictures of his children in Mexico City. His children playing in dirt. I'm like, all right, bro, keep working, man. Shit, I'll buy you a truck. You know, keep working. Help me. Because they're better than what the kids are coming out of high school as.
Well, that's part of the problem. Yeah, so much for following the Prussian model that we have. But, yeah, that would actually turn out better if we had a Prussian model. Instead, we have a post-World War II Jewish curriculum. But really, I don't think the answer is to have him help you or you help him. He should go back to Mexico, and he should change his country, because that's the hard part. Don't just come here and think you're going to solve your problems. That's kind of where we've been.
Some of the white pill, and Davis and I have talked about this, is that I hate it when I see people, you know, when we comment on the state of our country, immigration and people that don't belong here and non-whites. Yes, they're a huge part of the problem. But if you continue along that line long enough, you'll start to think like, well, you know, throughout history, whites have succeeded, and a lot of that happens to be genetic and cultural and ethnic. Okay,
you can't be what was.
That's true. In other words, Ugandans are not going to build fucking Detroit when Ford was there. So that's all true. But what I see is that when it comes down to the individuals, by telling the stories of, you know, what kind of jobs we used to have, it's our way of saying, look, there was something about us that it had to do with character, your individual IQ, not your racial anything. It just has to do with, are you the type that is willing to embrace shit and survive and rack up a bunch of experience, because it just makes you a better fucking human being. And right now, I'm in a position not to have to borrow somebody's couch to sleep on. I can buy somebody a couch. Part of the reason why that happened was because I did a whole bunch of really hard shit. Now, if that continues, that's a good thing. The best model is the German model, like I said. I mean, why was I planting trees alongside with 50 other Mexican women as a migrant worker in my mid-30s? I shouldn't have been doing that. Had the German model existed, I'd have been 10 years. I would have been a master plumber or a master carpenter or a master whatever.
No, you need to buy an old World War II tractor or old Panzer. That's what you need to buy. And go and plow these fields, stud.
You know, I tried to do the model by myself by going into like EMT school. I did that. The goal there, back in the 90s, early 90s, you could get an EMT license. You could do that, do your ride outs, get some experience, go to paramedic school, get your paramedic degree. And then after that, you could become an RN. And back then, an RN was like a fucking awesome job.
It's like a doctor. Once you go past the EMT, EMB levels, and then you go to that level, you can do a lot more. But
it could have worked for me.
But no, that's not going to help anybody. We need to get these nogs out of here. That's what we need to do.
That's a whole other problem. That's a whole other thing going on. Yeah, that's a discussion for another time for sure, because getting the nogs out would be that you could incentivize this, but we can't make a school to like a tech services program because we're not in charge right now. So we're not the ones to do that. We certainly can't get the nogs out. That would definitely require government incentives to have them relocate voluntarily at first to somewhere, you know, in Africa or whatever. So that's a whole other problem. We need to be the people at the flagpole raising the flag, because whatever you raise up the flagpole, pretty soon everyone's saluting. So,
yeah, that's all curable. That's all curable. I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm addressing the normie. We don't have to manipulate them. We don't have to turn them into nationalists. We don't have to force them to consume 10 years of fucking YouTube videos about revisionist history. We just need to put them to work and let them know that, hey, we're not going to let you fucking fail. We're going to teach you shit. That way, when you're in your, that means by the time you're 30, you know, you graduate from high school, around 18 years old. By the time you're 30, you will be a master something. And what that does is it makes us good. We don't need to worry about the rest of the people. Let's make ourselves fucking better. And that is something you can actually write to your congressman about. That's something you can talk to. I mean, on an individual level, that's something you can do as an employer, you know. So I'm just saying it's not bad to have a quick and easy vision of how fast and how great this place can be with simple institutional changes that just shift incentives from abandoning your kids to carrying them into their late 20s and teaching them how to do shit. We wouldn't be talking about 99% of the shit we talk about if we would just somehow focus our efforts. If you want to make changes in the country, that's a way to do it, you know? And that's got to be a process. And then the group I'm going to be meeting with in May, that's something that they are in a position to maybe at the basic level institute in like a zip code or in an area. They can actually do that. They can just say, this is the law here. When you graduate, we have businesses that are going to take you into a 10-year contract. We're going to bring that model back to America, and we're going to show you the results in 10 years. This is how long this shit takes. We're so deep in our own home zone that we need 500 counties to do this for 10 years.
Yeah, this is like steering a battleship. You know what I mean? And so you got to, what you're saying is.
That's something we can do. There's people in place that can, you know, destroy these local NGOs, which are getting in the way of all this bullshit. There's little things. You'd be surprised. There's a lot of the problems we think are huge and national. They're not. They're local. And a team of five good white dudes can knock out a lot of fucking problems when you organize, when you have them in your Rolodex, and when you're bumping into these people and working with them on a daily basis. You know, like,
well, that is the power of IRL, because you can do pilot programs that become scalable to entire counties from zip codes, you know.
You know how everybody hates my change of street sign analogy? You know what I started out with? And I abandoned it quickly. I said, okay, fine. We got, let's say, 30 people watching. We can't even get everybody to hit the like.
Yeah, I know.
How fucking shitty we are as a people. we can't get everybody to donate $2.
No, we got a lot. We can't get
everybody to hit the fucking like button. Like, I'm telling you, this is, you know, fuck the Jews and the Nogs. We can't get our own people to click like on a fucking video.
You're telling me.
I'm saying, so go home, motherfuckers. If you're not in this shit for real, do something small. Hit the fucking like button. Do anything that shows, hey, we got some momentum in our group. Every time we have a show, we got 52 people watching. We have 52 likes. Nobody else can say that.
Yeah. If everyone who downloaded the show gave $1, I'd have $3,000 a week. not happening.
Yeah, that's not happening. You can get better guests and do all sorts of crazy shit. But here's what you'd be doing. You'd be demonstrating that on a small scale, you can generate something like unity.
Yeah.
You know? So pardon me if I get exhausted about everybody talking about what they're going to do when they get their country back. Shut the fuck up and hit the like button, for God. And, well, I can't do that. Okay. See, maybe we ought to get rid of you and leave the Nogs. I'd rather live in a world of Nogs. You can at least pay them to do something as a group.
Well, I think that's debatable. But I do want to thank Serbian Bull. Thanks for five.
Serbian Bull.
And Alex Wazlak.
Yeah. Alex.
Bull is luck.
Alex. Lazwak.
Alex.
Alex. Lazwak. Lazwak.
Alex.
Alex.
Lazwak.
Alex.
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 Lazwak.
Alex.
Do we have the correct pronunciation of your name?
Alex.
Bull is luck.
Lazwak.
Luck.
All right. He gave 1488. Yep. All right, buddies. Let's do the final word round. We'll do this again. No worries. I like to relax on a Friday night. This was fun. So what say you, Bushmaster, in the way of goodbyes? Oh, no. Bushmaster's here, but I don't hear him. That's weird. What the heck? All right. Well, we'll say goodbye to Pugler. Bushmaster, I don't know what happened. I can see. I mean, you're. Oh, no. He just went away. Oh, goddamn. All right. Well, he was there. Now he's not there. All right, Puglord, what do you say?
Good night, everybody. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is something we talk about a lot, and I just try to be the outsider to go, hey, man, let's try to fucking clean our backyard a little bit, see if we can't make the place a little bit better before we go taking down the banks. You know? I mean, I'm really into that because, I mean, I've been watching – white nationalist shows. I've been listening, you know, to these things for years, and I spent, you know, about 15 years to go, wow, I wasted a lot of time. I could have been doing some simple shit. And that's what love for your people looks like. You know, it's somebody saying, hey, man, you know, shit sucks. We're deep in our own end zone, but we can do simple things to get 10 yards. And that's what it's going to look like. It just is, you know, and it's very doable. And that's the white pill, because I hear a lot of people saying they can't do shit. And I get accused of being told that, oh, we don't have any power. It's like, you know, if we're white and we're all the same and we all got high IQs and we're all so fucking awesome genetically, why can't we fucking hit a like button? That's a fair question. Just anything.
Well, it is. It is. And of course, in the chat, see, you made that comment earlier, which I know is sarcastic and ironic, where you said, like, maybe we should get rid of you and keep the nigger. And the people are like, wait, what is he for real? He didn't remember almost getting killed by a nigger with a chisel. Well, I think what you're doing is you're pointing out the you're doing the equivocating thing to point out how shitty white people are being. That's all you're doing. You don't literally mean
that. It's easy to talk grandiose, you know, in an internet group. It's a lot harder to just fucking do simple shit and get 10 people together to do one fucking little thing. And that is how it happens. That's how the Jews did it. Okay, that's how we did it. That's how everybody did it. It takes a long time to build shit. And nobody can complain about shit if they're just not taking basic, simple steps. You know, you can't do it.
Yeah, obviously. Well, that's a good final word. It's about fucking reality. Truth of the matter is, this shit takes a long time. It's a lot of tedium, a lot of work. And, you know, we're just, yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm just beginning. So I look forward to seeing what you experience in May from a bunch of people who have been doing the IRL shit. And, you know, even if they're just small projects, getting some things done. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah. We'll try to get some of these guys on the show. We'll work on that.
Shit, yeah. All right. In final closing, what'd you think of the, maybe you wrote back about it. What'd you think about that? The idea of the Spanish Inquisition for some show.
Yeah. Spanish Inquisition, is good. The failures of libertarianism is another one. Cause that's still good. Something that dominates. You know, when I listen to people talk about the economy or talk about that whole satanic idea of, hey, man, just go out there and, you know, just don't use government. It's like, we're not going to succeed if we don't learn to appreciate what a good government can do. And I know we've been attacked for fucking so long by shitty government. But libertarianism, you know, libertarianism is kind of like the paganism. of economics, and it shapes a lot of people's worldviews. You know, it's a really unproductive back alley to go down, thinking that, oh, government's useless, and the sign of a really strong country is when everybody's an individual and everybody just takes personal responsibility and gets shit done. You see how it's the opposite of that German model?
Yeah, libertarianism is retarded. Yeah.
We need strong government to fucking guide people, and that's how it happens. And at least get into government that doesn't get in our fucking way. You know, every time we try to, like, become an EMT, then go to paramedic, and then have a fucking, like, you know, UT used to be for state residents, I think it was $800. Yeah. But now there's just no such thing as a state, and therefore there's no such thing as a state resident. And so it's a small leap to take to go, what we need is good government, you know, and when people start collectively thinking, hey, government's not the fucking enemy, you know, it's the only way out. Mm. You know, that's who you pass the ball to get the fuck out of the 5-yard line. You know, that's, you absolutely have to have good government. And libertarianism just basically says government just gets in the way and fucks everybody over. And so learning to work with that idea, that's a big shift in the way you think about the world. If you're thinking government's the problem, you're never going to get out of this.
Well, it depends on the government, of course, right? Because it's only in a post-World War II era that governments have all become roughly uniform because they're all part of a post-World War II neoliberal world order, except for like some Eurasian countries. So that's why we're like a fish in a fish tank. All we know is what's around us. But there's other options for government. And it isn't just, for example, in the German model or fascism or something, which is nothing wrong with those. But that was suited. That was well suited for a time and a place in history. But we really have to go back to the drawing board, like a blueprint. I don't think we can just copy paste German fascism. We probably need to make become American futurists and try to make a post Jewish ascendancy America. One in which removes illegitimate powers, one that appoints a new political class, this kind of thing. So
yeah, again, it's one thing to read Chomsky's, you know, What Uncle Sam Really Wants, or, you know, Hegemony or Survival, or it's not about the political machinations that make the world function. It's simply about teaching your kids shit to do, so that you don't have that boomer mentality of, well, just let the kids figure out life. Like, that's a white thing. We're doing that. And that's fucking insane. And yes,
retarded. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and that's what it means to be conservative, to continue to do things that got your previous generations where they were. Like, we're having conversations because our parents weren't fucking homos. Because if they were, they wouldn't have kids and we wouldn't be alive. It's like you got to be able to use what worked for our people. And government, good government, was one of those tools that we had. And so, yeah, you get Pete on the show and he loves to fucking talk about how shitty libertarianism is. And it's good for the audience because it points out a lot of things that are just toxified our way of thinking. Because we just adopt this shit because we grew up in this libertarian swamp and this Jewish swamp and this post-World War II shit, you know? When you look at what we did for centuries that worked, and it basically stopped after World War II. So we really have – we're in our end zone, but we just got there. It's not like, you know, 60 years is a very fucking short period of time. You know, it's not like we've been this way forever. We do talk like that, like, well, the Jews have just run the world for so long. It's like, in America, dude, we got like 50 years to make up. Like, that's not an impossible dream.
No, it's not.
And there's a lot of people out there trying to do that. And, I'm just trying to be positive. It's like I see real paths to a much better country with a lot less effort than people talk about.
Yeah, yeah. And when, let me announce for everybody, I almost forgot that Rights for Whites gave on Buy Me a Coffee, and he like stacked a bunch of five donos and a 25 dono. Anyway, ended up being somewhere around $60 yesterday, so I appreciate that. And I got all your messages, but I'm not going to show it because it, on Buy Me a Coffee, sometimes it shows your actual, a good portion of your email, and then people could just try to figure out the rest. So I'm not going to show it, but yeah, I appreciate that very, very much. There might be one way to do it. Let me see right here.
Buy Me a Coffee is awesome, isn't it? I think that's a really good platform that works for a lot of people who are content creators.
It is. Yeah. They take a sizable chunk, which is unfortunate, but, yeah, there are others. In fact, you got CoinTree, I'm showing now, I think, right? Yeah. Don't forget Cash App Guy. Evidently, you can scan that, and it gives you a way to give me. I've never donated to myself, so I have no idea. But that's supposedly another way to go, would be the Cash App, not to be confused with the new FBI director. And I think CoinTree is only, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash, okay. Yeah, so they all work. They all work. Of course, you go to FTJ2, which evidently gets processed as something like words are words or something like that. Something like that it gets processed as. So anyway. All right, everybody. We've had a good night. Very productive. Pug Lord, get those pugs out. And I'll be talking to you this week sometime.
Ironically, all of my cars are broken right now. Yes, that happens to me.
Yeah. Even your car breaks, yeah.
We're Americans that just letting shit slide until they die. And then one day, you just got to fix it.
Yeah, you got to fix your own shit. Yeah, exactly.
You got to fix your own shit.
All right, buddies. All right, listen up, everyone. Tomorrow night, we have the further breakdown of The Prisoner with analysis and review. That's going to be with Luke Notaris. And then also Sunday with Luke Notaris is the book talk called Das Book, which is so far we're doing the Haas book about the Western versus the Eastern mind. It's called The Destiny of the Mind. And we've been doing a chapter by chapter analysis and discussion. And this is a really good example of how speaking about complex topics can clarify your thinking. And so I think that's what we're exemplifying, while learning a lot and having a good time. So every night, Monday through Sunday, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. And if you'd see, I'd really appreciate if you'd see your way to donating in any capacity possible. Yep. All right, everybody. Till next time.
Right Perspective Radio.
And it was so, so powerful.
Thanks for watching. Bye.
Davis Lerman.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
One purpose, one people, we are rising. Oh, one purpose, one people, we are rising.
Oh, wait a second. What am I, nuts? I almost forgot. Earlier, I thanked Pug Lord and read what he said for the 50. Boy, I'm retarded. Juggling. All right, here it is.
Paladin.
YYZ.
Paladin.
YYZ.
Paladin.
Paladin.
YYZ.
Paladin.
YYZ.
Paladin.
YYZ.
Paladin.
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 YYZ.
Paladin.
YYZ.
All right, now we'll continue the outro.
Right Perspective Radio.
And it was so, so powerful.
Thanks for watching. Bye.
Davis Lerman.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
One purpose, one people, we are rising. Oh, one purpose, one people, we are rising.